I'll rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Ms. Kelly, if you'll lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Happy New Year to everybody, full staff, to board members. I'll start off with comments from board members. Chief, you got any comments, anything?
Yes, sir.
Jamie, good to see you here. We haven't seen you in a while. Director, anything?
Good.
Johnson, good seeing you.
Good to see you, sir.
With that, anybody on virtual, professor, anybody? There are none. I'll yield back to director.
Yep, director.
All right, good morning. Let's go ahead and do a roll call since we have several members appearing virtually. Sheriff Daniels is in the room. Commander Figueroa, can you hear us?
Yes.
Good morning.
I can hear you. Good morning.
Mr. Johnson's in the room. Ms. Kelly's in the room. Professor Robinson, I can see you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Good
can
morning.
You hear me okay?
Yep, perfect. Thank you. Colonel Silbert's in the room. Chief Vasquez is in the room. Ms. Weiss, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Director, and I'll yield right back to you for your report.
Okay, I'm going to keep this brief today because we have a fairly lengthy agenda. Just a couple of announcements. As you know, we still continue to have three board vacancies. Chief Williams and Director Shin are unable to attend. So that kind of leads me to my next issue. We're going to have quorum issues for a couple cases. Ones I can identify right now, final action case number 5 for Atondo, and new case number 19, we'll have to pull for quorum issues. And we'll bring those to a future agenda. Monique Cody is our IA for final action cases today. And then just a note, housekeeping, new cases number 5 and number 6 will be, they appear in your agenda for Mike Delton to present, but actually Dave Kaporek will be presenting on Mike's behalf today. Thank you, Dave, for agreeing to do that on such short notice. With that, I'll move into my executive director's report, if that's okay with you.
Sure, Director.
Just a couple things. As you know, the legislative session started last week. Obviously, there's been a few bills already that have been dropped that are related to Arizona Post. I always track those throughout the session. There's no updates as of now, but as we move through this session, I will continue to update the board on any bill, any proposal that would impact Arizona Post. Couple other things, our budget, our CJEP funding was down in December, but we still are maintaining our fiscal forecast, so we're doing okay. I've talked about it in the past, but Prop 207 appropriated, and Prop 207, how it relates to our appropriated funding. As it stands right now, as the governor's proposed budget came out last week, we are not slated for any appropriated funding beginning January 1st of 2022. We'll rely solely on our CJEP funding, which is okay for us operationally. The only concern is that will change the way we reimburse academies for successful graduates. We will no longer do that. We've communicated that to all the academies. We've communicated that to all the agency heads. But as of right now, beginning July 1st, we'll no longer be doing that because the legislative intent at the close of the last legislative session was that agencies receiving Prop 207 funding from tax revenue would be paying those academy costs. I know the sheriff's office is looking at trying to make a change in that. We're staying neutral on the topic, but there is some things in the works. But as of right now, we're preparing for not having appropriated funding beginning January or July 1st of this year. So just want to keep that on your radar. If anything should change, I'll bring it back to the group and let you know. Other things, academy interest. Ben joked with me yesterday that seems to be the flavor. We're getting a lot of calls from around the state from different chiefs and different agencies asking, and different regions asking, what would it take to start our own academy? We've had at least 4 different groups inquire about that. Lori Waite and her team work very closely with them. And like I tell them, we will provide you all the support you need as far as what you need to do to set up an academy, but it's an arduous process. I just want to keep you apprised that there are a lot of different entities that would like to start their own statewide academies. Some of it's from Phoenix, as you know, is no longer accepting outside agencies. They're only Phoenix Regional is only training Phoenix PD personnel. That caused a little bit of an issue around the state. But as you know, we have 15 academies in the state. But again, we'll work with any agency on if they want to start their own academy. Just want to kind of put that in the back of your mind should that continue to move forward with some of these different entities. But again, it's not really a it's not a financial burden on us at all. It's really a burden on Lori and her team to help set them up, and we'll continue to provide that support. A couple other things, console training. As you know, I sit on the console ethics standards and training board. As part of that, they asked us if we would help them with their conference last week for training. They have to get a mandatory number of hours every year to maintain their certifications, and they asked us to help. Lori and Mandy and her teams all stepped up. They went down there and taught. I got incredible reviews. We always do Survey Monkeys, and the reviews were glowing. Not that I expected anything different, but I just want to publicly thank Rick Van Kieran, Mike Puente, Chuck Miller, and Ron Bain. Thank you so much for going down there, taking the time out of your schedule to drive down there and teach. It was greatly appreciated by us, as well as greatly appreciated by the members of the constables in the state of Arizona. So thank you. Rule changes, we're still working through the rule changes that you approved us to push forward several months ago. Our public hearing is the 26th of this month here in this building, and then once that happens, it'll go to GIRC for final approval and consideration. And then again, I always like to tell you what I attend on your behalf, just a couple things. I always attend the regional meetings, but over the last month and a half, been pretty busy. Went to the Copper and Rim County Chiefs meeting, that's up in Globe. I attended the Walia meeting down in Yuma. I attended the GOHS kickoff with most of you. I attended a meeting with Sheriff Nanos and his command staff down in Tucson. I'd never met the sheriff, so I went down and met with him. I attended the NARDA graduation in Prescott and the Walia graduation in Lake Havasu. And I'll go back to what I always say. If you haven't been to an academy graduation in a while, I recommend it. It really is reinvigorating to see the young men and women starting the path on their careers. So with that, Chairman, I'll end my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions any board members might have.
Thank you, Director. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, thank you, Director. We'll move on to agenda item number D, consent agenda. All see the consent agenda. If you have, I'll entertain a motion.
I wasn't here at the last meeting, so I don't know if I can.
Entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
This is Lisa. I move to accept the minutes.
Thank you, Lisa, for stepping up. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Chief. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Director, back to you on the agenda item E, proposed Federal Transition Academy.
Mr. Chairman, can I just get clarification? And Ms. Weiss, can I just confirm your motion was to approve the full consent agenda, not just the minutes, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. All right. Matt, back to you. Yep.
Item E is the Federal Transition Academy for the U.S. Border Patrol agents. We started getting calls several months ago from different agencies around the state inquiring about what it would take for Border Patrol agents to lateral, to waiver into Arizona as Arizona peace officers. Great question. Obviously, every agency in the state is looking for almost every agency state is looking for peace officers to hire. So we wanted to make, we're always looking for ways to make your applicant pool larger. So in that, we tasked Lori Waite and her staff, and eventually Rick, who did the research on this, and took a look at what Border Patrol agents get in their federal law enforcement training. And then he compared it to our current curriculum. And what he found was that their curriculum versus ours, they're about 482 hours short of what an Arizona peace officer gets through the basic academy curriculum. So working with one of our local partners down in Yuma, Arizona Western College, we put together, and Lori and her team put this together, a 12-week academy class for current Border Patrol agents to get the requisite training where they would be eligible to take the comprehensive final exam and become certified as peace officers in the state of Arizona. So what we're asking for you is to take a look at that information that we provide in your board packet and give us permission to move forward and let this pilot program go forward and see how successful it is. We are confident that through this 482 hours of additional training, plus your field training, plus your normal hiring process, we will still be producing excellent, high-quality Arizona peace officers. We're really excited about this. Arizona Western, Lori threw it out in a meeting. Arizona Western, like, we'll do it in a heartbeat. And they said they only need about a 2-month, Lori, correct me wrong, about a 2-month window from the time if the board approves this to get it up and running, and then we start hosting an academy for that transition program. If it's successful and we work out all the bugs, we would not be we would be inclined to look at other federal agencies, providing them the same opportunity, mirroring up what their training lacks, and put those academies together as well. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about this proposal.
Questions, Professor? Yeah. I know you've discussed a pilot being done down in southwestern Arizona in Yuma County, but for instance, if our agency were to have a litany of people who put in, would we be able to run that same transition at our compound?
No, great question. And actually, we actually had a local agency at a region at a meeting about a month ago say if it's successful, they'd be happy to do one here locally in the valley. So yeah, we could absolutely do that. We just didn't want to push it out to too many academies right up front until we work all the bugs. We want to make sure we do one class, it's successful, and then we'd be happy to host it if we had a partner agency that wanted to host it around the state.
My only concern is that in being in one of the corners of the state is that what if the people are coming from all different areas? Now, fortunately, most of the Border Patrol agents work somewhere on
yes.
the border, and that's a large part of the border, but that would be my only concern.
Yep. And we can definitely, again, once we get it up and running, if the board approves, then we'd be happy to partner with someone else to run the program. The only concern is we're not the ones running it. So if you wanted to host it at your compound, it would be incumbent upon you and your staff to run the academy. We'd provide you the curriculum. But again, we wouldn't be the ones running it. Arizona Western is going to actually run it with their staff.
Okay.
But yeah, I think we can make that work.
Any other comments, questions? If not, I'd hear a motion to support or deny.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board direct Arizona Post staff to create and operate a federal transition academy for U.S. Border Patrol agents. This will include creating a basic peace officer curriculum and administration of comprehensive final exam.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by the director. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, staff. Thank you, Lori, for leading that. Moving into final action cases. Case number one, 2019-066, Gino Duran. I'll turn it over to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. On September 18, 2019, this board voted to initiate proceedings against the respondent Deborah Thompson's peace officer certification, and a complaint was issued. The complaint charged that Ms. Thompson had violated Post Rules 13-4-109A7, A8, and A12. Ms. Thompson was formerly employed by the Arizona Western College Police Department. Specifically, it was alleged that between June 2018 and August 2018, Ms. Thompson stole approximately $14,625 from Mr. CR, a former boyfriend with which she had cohabitated. It was also charged that she lied to an investigator of the Yuma County Sheriff's Department and the Yuma County Attorney's Office during their investigation of that theft. Subsequent to the board initiating proceedings of this matter, Ms. Thompson was indicted for theft, a Class 4 felony. Ms. Thompson pled guilty to theft, a Class 6 felony, undesignated. However, at the time of sentencing, the Yuma County judge designated the offense a misdemeanor. Ms. Thompson was sentenced to supervised probation in order to pay restitution. The notice of hearing in this matter was personally served on Ms. Thompson by her supervising adult probation officer. On November 3rd, 2021, I conducted a hearing in this matter before an administrative law judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings. AD Post presented the testimony of two witnesses and submitted 10 items of evidence, including the indictment and sentencing order. Ms. Thompson failed to appear for the hearing, and it was conducted in absentia. At the conclusion of the hearing, the judge found that Post established, by preponderance of the evidence, that Officer Thompson wrongfully donated, gave away, or kept Mr. Sierra's property and made dishonest statements to the county attorney regarding the property. Post also established that Officer Thompson was convicted of the theft, a classic felony, pursuant to her guilty plea. The judge found, therefore, that Ms. Thompson had committed a felony and that her conduct amounted to malfeasance, misfeasance, or nonfeasance, and that her conduct jeopardizes public trust in the law enforcement profession. The board has a copy of the judge's decision. Based on the findings of the administrative law judge, I strongly recommend the board revoke Ms. Thompson's peace officer certification And I will note Ms. Thompson is not present.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Any questions? Comments? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
I move to accept the administrative law judge's proposed findings, fact, conclusions of the law, and revoke Ms. Thompson's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Director. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Jamie. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2018-135. Mr. Duran, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On December 19, 2019, this board voted to initiate proceedings against the respondent, Curlin Yeomans, peace officer certification, and a complaint was issued. The complaint charged that Mr. Yeomans had violated Post Rule 13-4-109A8 and A12. Specifically, it was alleged that Mr. Yeomans used his position as a police officer with the Colorado River Indian Tribal Police Department to obtain gratuities in the form of all access passes to a drag boat racing event that was being hosted by the Lucas Oil Company in Parker, Arizona, and that during the internal investigation of that misconduct, Mr. Yeomans provided false information to the investigator. This misconduct was first reported to the Crick Police Department by the Lucas Oil Company's Director of Security, a retired California police officer, who was personally solicited by Mr. Yeomans for those passes. On October 5th and 6th of this year, I conducted a hearing in this matter before an administrative law judge, Jenna Clark, at the Office of Administrative Hearings. I represented Arizona Post, presented the testimony of four witnesses, and submitted 13 items of evidence. Mr. Yeomans was represented by Mr. Edmundo Robina, and he presented the testimony of three witnesses, and Mr. Yeomans testified on his own behalf. Mr. Robina and Mr. Yeomans are present in the hearing room. On October 29, 2021, ALJ Clark issued her decision. In that decision, the judge found that AZ Post had proved both allegations by preponderance of the evidence. Copy of the decision has been provided for your review. Please note that Judge Clark also issued a notice of quorum addendum in this case, indicating she makes no recommendation as to discipline in this case. Although the judge initially did make a recommendation, that recommendation is not authorized by law, as the board is the final authority with regard to discipline. I would ask you to ignore Judge Clark's recommendation pursuant to ARS 41-1092I, as indicated in the notice of quorum addendum. Specifically with regard to the first allegation, the judge found that on October 12, 2018, Mr. Yeomans, under false pretenses, used his position as a peace officer to obtain two passes for the boat racing event in violation of the Arizona Administrative Code, specifically Sections A8 and A12. The judge found that Mr. Yeomans acted without authority to do something he knew or should have known was wrong, specifically obtaining all access passes from the Director of Security for the boat racing event, and that conduct amounts to malfeasance. With regard to the second allegation, the judge found on October 18, 2018, Mr. Yeomans provided false information to investigators by denying he solicited those two passes to the boat racing event, again in violation of the Arizona Administrative Code. The judge found that Mr. Yeomans was not genuinely honest about his intent or his behavior during the course of the internal investigation. She found that although respondent did not solicit boat race passes from the Director of Security, he should not have accepted them. Furthermore, she found that acceptance of the boat race passes amounted to accepting a gratuity and that such conduct diminishes the public trust or brings embarrassment to a law enforcement agency. Members of the board, when Mr. Yeomans became a police officer with the Crick Police Department, he swore an oath. He swore to be honest in thought and in deed in his official and personal life. He swore to never accept gratuity. He swore that he would recognize his badge of office as a symbol of public faith and accept it as a public trust. As the board is acutely aware, the success of law enforcement profession depends on the trust and respect of the community whom they swear to serve. Unfortunately, in this case, Mr. Yeomans dishonored his badge, and in so doing, he violated his oath, and more importantly, he violated Arizona Post rules. Mr. Yeomans conducted himself as if he were entitled to special privileges or gratuities as a benefit of his badge of office, and Mr. Yeomans lied in order to avoid the consequences of his misconduct. His actions amounted to malfeasance, and it is exactly the type of malfeasance that diminishes the public trust in the law enforcement profession. I remind the board that in other cases where an officer has a sustained allegation of untruthfulness, the board has deemed revocation as the only appropriate discipline. Therefore, based on the facts of the case, AD Post staff strongly recommends that this board revoke Mr. Yeoman's peace officer certification. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Any questions for Mr. Duran? Hearing none. Counsel, would you want to speak for a few minutes?
Yes, sir.
I'll yield the floor to you. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I know that you all have many cases to look at. I want to make sure that you understand the facts of this case as found by the administrative law judge so that you can see what makes sense and what makes no sense at all in this case. Officer Yeomans has been a police officer since 2005 and began his employment with the Colorado Indian Tribe Police Department in 2012. He continues to work there now, Graves. Officer Yeomans owns a mobile home in Parker, Arizona, which is next to the Blue Water Resort and Casino. This isn't in the findings of facts, but just to give you some context, the Blue Water Resort is right on the Colorado River. And on October 13 and 14, 2018, the Blue Water was hosting an annual drag boat race, which Officer Yeomans and his partner, Officer Luis Sandoval, were scheduled to work as a security detail. That race anticipated attracting thousands of spectators. Everything I'm telling you, unless I tell you otherwise, is in the findings of facts. And if you ask me, I can tell you exactly where. On October 12, 2018, the day before the race was to start, Officer Yeomans returned to his home about 7:15 a.m. from the shifts. He works graveyards. And his elderly neighbor walked up to him and asked him if he knew how he could get a pit pass for a friend that's disabled. And Officer Yeoman said, I'll go find out for you. He changed his clothes, got into his golf cart, and as he was starting to leave, another neighbor comes up and says, hey, I'll race you in his golf cart to go 5 miles an hour. So they drove together, and he made his way to the security trailer. After getting the information for his neighbor about the pit pass, Officer Yeomans talked with the head of security, Mr. Wright, and asked him if he would need a pass if he were to use his personal cart for that race. Thousands of people there. This thing goes for like a mile, and his thought was, I'll use my golf cart rather than walk around this place. Mr. Wright said it wouldn't be necessary if you're in uniform. Mr. Wright said, but I'll give you one anyway. Mr. Wright then turns to the neighbor, Mr. Guardia, who's not a police officer, and asks him, are you working the race too? And Guardia says, yes, I am. Yeomans turns to Guardia, looks at him, and Wright goes, okay, well, and he gives him the passes, and he goes, he drives away. And this is in the report. Yeomans turns to Guardia and says, why did you say that? You're going to get me in trouble. And Guardia says whatever he says. That momentarily after that happens, Yeoman's sergeant comes by, and Yeoman says to him, hey, Sergeant, I'm thinking about using my personal cart for this thing. Can I do that? He says, no, use the mules that we have, the carts that we have from the department. Okay. He then goes and talks to Mr. Wright and says, hey, that guy that said he was a police officer, he's not a police officer. He's not working here, and I'm going to go. Officer Sandoval is working with me for this race. He goes, okay, thanks for the clarification. He then goes home and goes to bed to his trailer. Tells Mr. The elderly gentleman, you know, the information, goes to bed. The elderly gentleman goes and buys the pit pass for his friend. That evening, Sergeant Brady, who's no longer with the department, has been fired, saw Mr. Wright. And at some point in a conversation that they have, Mr. Wright says that he gave Officer Yeomans these two passes. These are the passes. It's this. It's a piece of paper that says Crip Tribal Police on the bottom. It has zero intrinsic value. Sergeant Brady says, what do you mean he's using his personal cart? He's supposed to be using department cards. Brady then marches over to Officer Yeoman's house and alleges, accuses him of soliciting these TIP pass or these this all access pass. What are you talking about? I'm going to use, I was going to use my personal vehicle and or my personal car. Brady won't hear it, walks away. That night, they take, he still has the passes. They take the passes and put him on administrative leave. And 4 days later, they fire him for soliciting a gratuity. The CRIT Human Resources looks at this, says it's nonsense, because it is, and reinstates him. He then takes a polygraph before he starts back. The polygraph shows in there that he talked to the polygrapher about the allegations in this case, but for whatever reason, the polygrapher doesn't ask him direct questions about that. In any case, he passes the polygraph and moves on. So now let's talk about the allegations in this case. With those facts, and if you need me to tell you where those are in the findings of facts that the judge found here. And this is normally a really good judge. This is it's incomprehensible to me. The first allegation is that under false pretenses, Officer Yeomans used his position as a peace officer to obtain two passes for a boat racing event. Now you have to ask yourself, what did Officer Yeomans actually do here? If you go back and look at page 3, paragraph 8 of this findings of fact and conclusions of law, Officer Yeomans advises Mr. Wright that he was working the event and he was going to use his personal, thought he was going to use his personal cart and ask him if he needed a pass. Mr. Wright says, not if you're in uniform, but here's one anyway. Here's some anyway. But ultimately, the really salient point here is that he didn't solicit passes. He asked if he needed a pass, and it was for work purposes, not for personal purposes. This is all for work purpose. There's not any evidence in this case that he accepted anything for his personal purposes. A gratuity is for your personal purposes. If you give a server at a restaurant a gratuity, it's for them. It's not for the restaurant. What he asked for was for his work the next day. No evidence that he was going to give this to anyone or that he gave it to anyone or that he used it for himself. And it's clear that he asked his sergeant if he could then use the cart, and when he didn't, when our sergeant says, nah, use the mules, fine, okay, this is fine. His thinking is not wrong here. He's thinking about how do I get around in this park in an easy way on where there's all these people that are going to be there.
Counsel, I'll give you about 3 more minutes. Okay.
Allegation number 2 is that he provided false evidence or information to investigators by denying that he solicited the two passes. The judge specifically writes on page 12 that he did not solicit the two passes. She says, although respondent did not solicit the boat race passes from Mr. Wright, he knew he shouldn't have accepted it. She's 100% right that he didn't solicit, and 100% wrong that he shouldn't have accepted it. If he didn't talk to his sergeant about it, that would be a different story. If he were using it for personal purposes, different story. But this is for work purposes, and he doesn't do it on his own. He talks to his sergeant, and he doesn't lie about it. This case, I've been doing this for 25 years. It's one of the worst cases. They're talking about taking away this man's livelihood and certification on a nothing. And I'm begging you, don't go for it. It's wrong. It is utterly wrong.
Thank you, counsel. Hold on just for a second.
Any questions?
Yeah. Any questions for Mr. Yeoman?
I have a question in general.
Director.
Who conducted the investigation on this?
Mr. Brown.
You mean for Post or for... Oh, are you asking? I'm sorry.
General, who conducted the investigation on this?
Rod River Indian Tribe's internal investigator, as named Scott Ketchum, who's now currently the chief of that. Who's currently the chief now of that
department. He is the chief.
Now, at the time, he was an investigator.
Okay, and this same department where he's the chief has reinstated him, and he's working there again.
That takes quite a bit of explanation, Colonel, and I'd be happy to explain. At the time, he was terminated by his department. Then a new interim chief was brought in who, according to the evidence, and I believe Mr. Robina would agree with me, simply felt that the discipline, and the judge did not include this, and I think counsel would agree also that it's not included in the judge's finding, but the new interim chief comes in and says, well, I think, does not conduct a new investigation, simply feels that the punishment of termination was too extreme and reinstated him of his own volition. But that was after this matter had already been reported to post as a termination with misconduct. And then that chief has subsequently also departed, and now there's a new chief who happens to be the person who did this investigation.
What about the Human Resources Department?
The Human Resources Department, again, this was a matter of contention at the hearing. I don't know why the judge did not address it. The Human Resources Department had no authority to, while they did reinstate him, they did not conduct an independent investigation. They're the tribe, and they simply took it upon themselves to reinstate him without exonerating him of the wrongdoing. They simply reappointed him.
Mr. Chairman, may I mention one more thing?
Hold on a second. Did he receive any discipline at all?
Other than being terminated?
Yeah, I mean, did they terminate him and unterminate him? Is it 0 to 100?
Yes, almost exactly that. He was terminated, new chief came in and took it upon himself to simply reappoint.
So he got reappointed, the termination went away, and no reduced discipline was administered?
No. He was terminated. The termination was reported to post with misconduct, so we opened the
investigation. Not what I'm asking.
Okay.
They terminated. They fired him.
Correct.
He got reinstated back to the job.
By a new chief, yes.
By the new chief. But did they give him a lesser, because he felt that termination was excessive, did he give him a lesser discipline?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
So basically, he has not been disciplined in this.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the board, he's not been disciplined. He was reinstated and given all of his back pay. I do want to point out, I failed to point out, the administrative law judge in this case, while I believe she made a mistake on these findings of facts or on the conclusions of law, she recommended nothing more than a written reprimand in this case.
And I would object and, to that.
And let me finish. And what the post staff did was they started to object to this administrative law judge offering recommendations. And they wrote subsequent to this case, they wrote a request for reconsideration, asked her not to do findings of facts, and they point out this law. In civil law, if you do there is no rules of civil procedure for administrative law other than what's in the statute, right? So what they do is they'll go to the rules of civil procedure. If you request do a request for reconsideration, before a judge says, yeah, I'll reconsider it, they'll give the other side an opportunity to explain why you shouldn't change your decision. But she didn't do that in this case. They did their request for reconsideration. She ruled, okay, you know, the post rules or the rules in the statute don't say specifically you can do a recommendation. But I know for the last, I don't know how many years, they've been doing recommendations. As a matter of policy for you folks, you'll need to decide, do we want the recommendations? I would argue you should have it as a data point. Not as you make the final decision, but why would you not want the person who's hearing the case to make a recommendation? That's an argument for a different day. You should know, though, that in this case, she saw this and said, whatever, it's not worth more than a written reprimand. She's wrong on the law, but.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ram, I'm going to give you final thoughts on all this in a minute, okay? Mr. Yeoman, do you want to speak to the board, address the board?
Well, first of all,
let me have you go to the microphone, and then I'll give you a few minutes.
Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Herlin Yeomans. I've been in law enforcement for 16 years, and I'm really proud of my job. That day, as my attorney advised, I did not request a pass. He was provided by the subject. When my neighbor identified himself as a cop, he took off. I went back immediately to talk to him, but before that, I saw my sergeant, and he explained that. I said, sir, is that okay if I use my golf cart since I leave right there within that mile of the event? He says, Yeomans, don't use your gas, don't use your vehicle, use the mules that we have at the office. Don't use yours. I said, okay, sir, I will do that. Immediately, I approached Mr. Wright, and I clarified that the other subject was not a cop. That's when he provided that pass with a script PD for me to use at work the following day. Another thing that I want to put in clear, that the acting chief back then is already fired. The people that was trying to do this was against me because with all my heart and my, I always, it's not being snitch, but if they're mistreating people or they're doing wrong things, I tell. And the acting chief was doing, having sex with my dispatcher, our dispatcher, as well as Robert Brady was beating up on tribal members. That sergeant was fired from the department for beating up on tribal members, which I have reported before, and he had a beef against me. That day, he went to my house, knocked on my trailer, and says, Jonas, I know what you're doing. I can take your license away. He called your friends to get those passes back and said, sir, what are you talking about? I just got the passes here. That's for me to work tomorrow. When he saw the passes, and he was on the video with that deal, once we had my witnesses, he just went like this and took off. I tried to file a complaint against him. My supervisor said, Yeomans, you know, the acting chief isn't going to do nothing to him. So just let it go. Write it up. I said, okay. I got to my surprise that they called me in. They let me go. 7 months later, I lost faith in justice because I did everything, follow policy for the appeal. They called me back to the office and said, Dr. Yeomans, I need to talk to you. They opened up an investigation within the reservation, which I demand my AG's office to provide, like, the findings of the investigation. But because they said it's a tribal nation, it's a sovereign nation, they will not release anything that happened in the chambers. But the main thing is that I was clarified, and they even provided a letter signed by Chief Morris to Post, where it says that everything is being cleared in my case. They paid me $36,000 a check that they give to me for coming back to work. After that, I've been with them for 2 years and a half. I do respect law. I follow the law 100%. I don't know what to tell you. This is so silly and dumb. Just because I was honest, I moved forward to report to the other officers that were doing wrong things. As you know, my name, I ring a bell. Back in 2012, we filed a complaint against Chief Gilbert in Quartzsite, and we were all good. We even got a lot. I apologize. Back then, because we were talking the truth and against what is right, I mean, to go for what is right, Chief Gilbert was fired, and they pay us money on the lawsuit that we had, and I've been working since then. So until now, I mean, last night I was supposed to work. My deputy chief told me to take the day off to come and not to worry and come here. See you Friday back to work. That's all I have to say, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Yeomans. Any questions? Five members. Mr. Yeomans, can you stay up there for just a minute? I do have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
The administrative law judge confirms that there was a false information to investigators by you.
Correct.
Can you talk about that?
I also said that the investigator, which now is the chief of police on my department, when he did his interviews, he never recorded my witnesses. He was hiding things from the investigation when he did that. He even told me that it was too severe, the punishment, and that's the chief, Ketchum, which is my chief right now.
This has been sustained by the administrative law judge, too.
Right.
Can you explain? I mean, this is sustained. This is what the finds and facts that we have to go by, and this is where, to me, most critical for us as a board, as an integrity board. That's where we're asking for your explanation in that. And
one of my things, to feel that the investigator was not being truthful in there, he was the best friend of the guy that I snitched on, Robert Brady. He was the one who brought him to work. And when he did the investigation, I even asked for another agency to conduct the investigation, not him. But they still decided to just follow my order. Acting captain was the chief at the moment, Welch. He said, just go through it. And I didn't feel that it was fair because that guy knew Brady and they were best friends. And when he did the interviews to everybody, he did not record my witnesses. Were they, that old man who testified, the only thing I went up there was to ask how to, for him to get his pit pass. those factors were offered to me. When the other gentleman said that he was a cop, I feel that he can get me in trouble, and immediately I addressed that. And he's on the order, too, where Mr. Wright says that, yes, I clarified that and even say thank you to me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any other questions, comments from Mr. Yeoman? Hearing none. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Rand, I'll have you final thoughts.
I just want to clarify some of the points. Again, the respondent and a friend approached Mr. Wright, who is the director of security for Lucas Oil and a retired police officer. The judge found in her, initially the claim was that they contacted Mr. Wright to obtain a handicap pass for a friend. The judge even writes that on page 10 that this is a red herring. This reaching out to the director of security to get help for a handicapped friend is a red herring. Has nothing to do with the offenses. Mr. Wright, again, the director of security for a major American company and a former police officer, is the one who reported this misconduct to the police department because, and I quote on page 4, he felt he had been swindled by the respondent because he and the person he was with both identified themselves as a police officer, except only one of them was. The other one was impersonating a police officer, and the respondent never corrected that before he accepted passes for both of them. Also, again, I would point out that Mr. Wright specifically told the respondent if he was working the event in an official capacity, he didn't need passes. But again, he accepted these two passes for himself and on the part of the second person who was impersonating a police officer, who was a civilian, had no connection to the police department whatsoever. And again, I would point out that the judge noted that respondent, and this is on page 11, respondent's acceptance of the passes, particularly in light of his instruction by his sergeant, constitutes his acceptance of gratuity in violation of the CRIT policies and post regulations. And even though respondent never gave out either the passes or used one for himself, that does not make respondent's act of accepting the gratuity any less appropriate. And simply, he didn't have a chance to give them out to anyone because they were seized from him as soon as they received a report of misconduct from the director of security for Lucas Oil. And again, I don't think the respondent has provided any explanation about his the findings that he was in fact untruthful during this investigation. So I believe the appropriate sanction is revocation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Any final comments for Mr. Duran? My members? If not, discussion, or I'd entertain a motion.
This is Lisa. I have a question for our counsel. What are our options based on where we are in this process? I know we have a potential motion to make in following the recommendation to revoke, but what other options are available to us?
Thank you, Lisa. Monique, you can.
This is Monique Cody, your incident advisor. Your first option would be in regards to the findings of fact and conclusions of law. You can look at the findings of fact and conclusions of law and determine whether you agree with all of them or want to revise some of them or even reject some of them. So the basis of the discipline would be based on findings of fact and conclusions of law. So that's the first thing. As the Chief Daniel pointed out in the conclusions of law, the state had made its case by preponderance of the evidence. So with that as the basis, in your rules, for violations of these particular rules that are cited, your options are revocation or a suspension. I know that the administrative law judge mentions a letter of reprimand, but I don't believe that that is a tool available to you under your rules, unless you know Mr. Brackel disagrees. So to me, your options would be to suspend or revoke, or at your discretion, you could decide not to take any discipline whatsoever. But that would be counterintuitive to the existing findings of fact, conclusions of law. So if you take no discipline, I know this is a really lengthy answer, but you would need to pay careful attention to if you want to revise any of the conclusions of law. But the bottom line is for the discipline, revocation, a suspension of any type, or just to disregard the decision and take no discipline.
Monique, I'll do a clarification to that question, too, if you can. If we accept the conclusion of law, finding of facts, from the ALJ, and there's an integrity sustain here. I don't know this board, my tenure on this board, ever doing suspension for integrity. It's always been a revocation. Can you comment on that? Do you know of any exceptions to that thought as an integrity board, as we sit here?
Yeah, Monique, I can take Mr. Chairman, if you like.
Sure.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Since my time here, the board has not, to my knowledge, given a suspension for a sustained violation or of integrity of a lie. The board has always taken swift action to revoke a peace officer certification.
Mr. Brackel?
Yes. Mark Brackel. Just a caveat to that and a nuance to that is on prior occasions, the board has distinguished dishonesty pre-Garrity to a supervisor from post. And in those cases, to a supervisor or before the admonishments were administered, the board has suspended police officers for whatever set amount of time the board felt was appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Brackel. Back to the board. Members?
It's Lisa again. I'm having a problem with the integrity versus dishonesty issue that Mr. Brackel was just speaking of. It appears to be Mr. Wright versus this officer, the respondent. And I don't have an answer in my mind right now. I'm just having lack of clarity of my own decision-making with regard to the process where the ALJ, and I know technically she's not supposed to do it, recommends a written reprimand, and we are discussing revocation.
Can I add something to Director? Mr. Wise's comment? You know, it's rare in these cases that I can tell you that I have a hard time following a case and getting clarity out of the case. I don't know what went into the internal investigation from the CRIT that got here, but even reading the proceedings from the ALJ, this case is just, it seems a little bit all over the place, for lack of a better word. And with Sheriff Danil speaking to the issue of integrity, I agree, you know, when we have issues of integrity come before the board, we pretty well rule consistent. I just don't know if I can get a clear understanding if there was a lack of veracity in this case or not. I don't know if, and I guess I'm just speaking to the group as a whole, I don't know that I can get a grasp of where that lack of veracity comes into play. And I don't know if that's what Ms. Wise is speaking to, but those are the challenges I'm having with the case.
Further comments? Lisa?
So, Colonel, that's exactly what I'm speaking to. And the problem I'm having is you have a chief that rehires, they pay back the salary. It doesn't seem to be an issue to the acting chief, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I was trying to follow all back and forth. And he's currently working there, and this has been ongoing since 2018.
The other issue I would bring up, and I can't say what happened here in this case. We heard Officer Youngman speak. But there's obviously a great deal of volatility in the ranks of this agency. It appears as though, unless Mr. Yeomans is being less than honest here with the board right now, that he's reported misconduct by some of the people who are some of the investigators in this case. And I'm sorry, I would love to stand here before everybody and say I've never watched a police department or a police agency be vindictive against their employees, but unfortunately I've seen it on too many occasions where an administration can be vindictive against its employees. I would hope to think that we get better every day and we don't see it very often, but we're going from one chief that terminates them to an interim chief that comes in, and here he hires him, and they give him back pay. And then the guy who was investigating him becomes the chief, and he has no problem keeping him. And he's the guy who did the investigation. So I don't know if I'm the only person in this room who says, what the heck is going on? But I got to tell you, what the heck is going on is what's going through my mind. And I have a hard time saying that I can revoke somebody's certification and their career and their livelihood when I don't have concrete foundation as to what transpired in an internal investigation and a subsequent hearing and a rehire and a back pay issue. And I, for the life of me, don't even know why a polygraph was involved. But that's at least where I am.
Thank you, Director. Comments? Anybody else?
Amy? I really am struggling with that we can pinpoint and say this is issue one, and we have the evidence that backs and supports that there is a proven integrity issue. I don't see where Garrity was read. We don't have a clear definition of an investigation that we're able to look at. I'm really struggling to make a decision as well.
Thank Mr. Chairman, to that point, if you would like, we can pull this case from the agenda. We can provide you with all of the exhibits, all of the reports, and bring for you to review and bring this back to a future case so you have all the information.
My concern is this is 2018 on this case, and irrespective of that, we've got a person whose livelihood has been, I'm guessing, up and down. There is an effect on mental health for 3.5 years, not knowing what's going to happen. And I struggle with that component of it as well. So we're going to say, hey, just hang tough, and you can sit there on a tight wire for a little while longer and see how that works out for you. I don't like it. I'll wait until you're ready to make motion, sir.
Thank you, Director. One of the concerns I have is I've never seen the ALJ make the unique recommendations. That's very unique in a case like this, where integrity is on the table. And that's a setback there, too. And I think the Director makes a very good point, which obviously I think we've all recognized that the one that investigated you is also the one that's now employing you and continuing down the road. I don't know the politics or the diplomacy or lack of within your agency, but there are some clouds over this. There's no doubt about it. And I agree with the Director also on the fact that it is your career, and you've been doing this for 16 years. So that is a challenge. I would love the opportunity, and I don't know if we want to pursue it any further, but the opportunity for that chief to come in and talk or lead a report from him on what the intent that Monica, we talked about the Garrity part of this. I don't know. I mean, that's the hard. This is very vague. I will agree. But I've also been one to always support our ALJs that listen to this and do process for our AG staff. But this is just so unique. It's so unique. And so I respect my colleagues and their fogginess on this, too. So
the one thing I want to add, I'm not trying to disqualify one way or another what transpired here. I don't know that if the chief that terminated you felt they were in good standing to do so, and may in their mind have had valid reason, but just with what transpired throughout this investigation, and then what I'm seeing here is what I have issue with.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to. I think we can look at if you want to table it or if we want to conclude it. So I'll entertain a motion for either.
I'll make a motion that the board take no further action, send it back to agency discretion.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Yes, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
I'm sorry, this is Monique Cotia. Monique. I do have a question. So. As part of this motion or as a separate motion, I think the board should make clear whether you are adopting any of the findings of fact or conclusions of law or revising any or just rejecting the conclusions of law and finding of fact outright.
I'll yield back to
what that motion.
Thank you, Monique. I'll yield back to the Director.
I think that I would be I'm not rejecting all the findings of fact. I think there's some factual statements in there. I think there's a lack of clarity. Findings and clarity in what came from the investigation within this for our understanding, and with the facts in front of us right now, I'm making my recommendation to send it back for agency discretion. Is that clear enough?
So you are not wanting to revise the findings of fact. You're not wanting to revise the conclusions of law where the ALJ did agree for allegations number one and two that the post-attorneys. So well, you're not wanting to change anything. You're just wanting to.
I would say then I guess I have to be rejecting some of the findings of fact and conclusions of law. I just can't say as a whole, but for purposes of the recommendation, yes.
Well, POST is a unique board in that that provision of the AAPA where you're required to go through each finding of fact and conclusion of law doesn't apply. Historically, the board has complied. So I would say that just by the statute itself, you don't have to go through and reject. You can just state on the record your discomfort and then continue with your motion. But this is a very unusual matter.
I think it didn't I state that?
Well, it's just I was hoping we could pin it down a little bit more, but I see the issue.
I can't speak for each board member. I can just tell you from what I've heard from the board members who've spoken that it seems that we're echoing the same sentiments. From what we can gather from the investigation, there is a lack of clarity of the facts for us to substantiate a finding of other than recommending that no further action be taken and go back to agency discretion.
Yeah, may I make a comment, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
I certainly understand the board's concerns, and I would agree that this is a very brief and poorly written decision. It does not reflect the abundance of evidence and the hours of testimony that were presented over 2 days by both myself and Mr. Robina. I believe if the board had the opportunity to review the transcripts, to look at the exhibits that were admitted into evidence, a lot of which, again, are just not mentioned here, the board would have a better sense of why the judge reached those conclusions. Because, again, I agree, it's confusing and it's short and it doesn't mention a lot of specific details. But I would propose that if the board did have an opportunity to review the full record, to see the documentary evidence, including the internal investigation and all the supporting documents, it would be easier for the board to make a definitive decision one way or the other. That's just, as the person who litigated the case, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr.
Who investigated the case for Crazy Post?
Mr. Jacobs.
Okay, so if there's a lack of clarity or understanding here, there should have been more information provided herein to provide us the ability to have better grasp and understanding of what transpired. Post had that opportunity to put that in there, correct?
Not to the administrative law judge's decision. No. I mean, we can provide...
But what we read is the information from the ALJ's decision, and it's usually the investigator from AZ Post provides us a summary of what transpired.
Well, Mr. Jacobs testified in this case. The board was provided a summary at the charging phase back in 2018. But at this stage, and again, this is the first time I'm presenting you with an administrative law judge decision. I don't know if it's been done differently in the past. But again, there's just this decision omits critical information, in my opinion, and I don't have any control over that.
We've always, Mr. Duran, we've always yielded to ALJ's decision, and I think we all would agree, both counsels to include this member based on what's been stated today. We have to go by what's stated here, and that's where we have the challenge that's facing the board members, and I respect what you're saying. I really do. So I'll yield back to the director for his motion and reconfirm the second, and we'll go from there.
I don't even know if I have the ability to re-articulate the entire motion that I have to articulate. I've just made a motion that we take no action and send this back for agency discretion. I will state for purposes of the record, that there are aspects of what we can glean from the ALJ's findings that are clear. Others are unclear, but with the facts before us and presented in front of us, I'm making a recommendation or motion that the board take no further action and send it back to the CRIT department for agency discretion.
Thank you, Director, for the modified motion. Do we have a second, Jamie?
Jamie Kelly, you'll second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Gentlemen, good luck to you. Take your lessons forward.
I mean,
thank you.
It's over, right?
It's over. It's over. Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you, Council.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make...
Mr. Johnson, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make sure you're aware that I recused myself on some matters. And I actually provided some forms prior to the hearing or to the meeting today, so that Mr. Giordano could evaluate that for quorum purposes. So I just wanted to make sure you're aware of that.
Correct. We have that. We have that note, Katie.
Okay.
If we could note which cases, so we know too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That way we know you're not speaking. Thank you. All right. Moving ahead. Next case. Case number 3-2021-108. Mr. Duran. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Arizona Post staff and respondent officer, former officer, Julio Meza, offered the attached intent agreement for your review and approval. Mr. Meza is not represented by counsel. I'm not sure if he's attending remotely. I believe he is, if the board should have questions for him. On May 12, 2021, Mr. Meza was employed by the Yavapai Preston Indian Police Department. On that day, respondent was on duty and was contacted at a local casino by a citizen who told him an ex-girlfriend of Mr. Lisa G was harassing him at the casino. He said he was in the process of getting Lisa G served with an order of protection. During his contact with these parties, respondent failed to notify his dispatcher of the call, did not conduct a records check of either party to confirm whether an order of protection was in place, nor did he check either party for any possible wants or warrants, and failed to complete a police report as required by YPPD policy. On May 18, 2021, the YPPD received a complaint regarding the respondent alleging that during this incident he attempted to convert his contact with Alicia G into a personal relationship. Respondent was served with a notice of investigation and was ordered not to discuss the internal investigation with anyone. However, on June 7, 2021 and June 9, 2021, respondent did contact a potential witness and discussed the details of the internal investigation with her before sharing text messages. On June 15, 2021, YPPD sustained multiple allegations of misconduct and respondent was terminated. After an appeal to the tribe, his termination was reclassified to a resignation. The parties to the consent agreement agree that Mr. Mays' actions are in violation of proposed rules, specifically 13-4-109-88-12. The parties propose that the board suspend Mr. Mays' peace officer certification for a period of 3 years, beginning retroactively to June 15, 2021, until June 16, 2024, at which time the certification will have lapsed. The proposal is within the range of permissible discipline for peace officers who have committed similar misconduct, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Durant. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly. I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for a 3-year suspension of peace officer certification beginning June 15th, 2021 and ending June 16th, 2024.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case. 2021-112, Mr. Bradshaw.
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the cases that Mr. Johnson's recused from.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Bradshaw, good morning. The floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, Mr. Bradshaw, one of your compliance specialists. This case involves former Officer John Strickland of the Gilbert Police Department. During or about 2014, Officer Strickland began an extramarital relationship with Miss Sherry, the wife of Mr. Joe. Both family friends of the Stricklands. During 2017, Mr. Joe was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to prison for assaulting his wife, Miss Sherry. Beginning with the arrest of Mr. Joe, Mr. Joe's sister, Shauna, believed Officer Strickland and Miss Sherry had conspired to have her brother arrested and communicated her belief with Officer Strickland and others. During or about 2020, Officer Strickland's wife, Miss Leslie, separated from Officer Strickland due to ongoing relationship with Miss Sherry. On April 4th, Miss Shauna filed a complaint with the Gilbert Police Department alleging Officer Strickland had threatened to put a bullet in her head and provided a screenshot of an Instagram message supporting her allegation. When questioned, Officer Strickland acknowledged sending the message to Miss Shauna but stated he did so after Miss Shauna had made threats against Miss Sherry. After Miss Leslie separated from Officer Strickland began sending his estranged wife vile threatening email messages, and on April 26th of 2021, Miss Leslie had Officer Strickland served with an order of protection. Officer Strickland contested the order of protection, but on May 11th of 2021, the judge upheld the order, deemed Officer Strickland a threat to Miss Leslie's safety, and prohibited Officer Strickland from possessing a firearm and or ammunition, and the judge declined to make an exception for Officer Strickland to possess a firearm while performing his peace officer duties. Officer Strickland resigned in lieu of termination from the Gilbert Police Department effective June 29, 2021. On September 15, 2021, the board voted to initiate proceedings, and a notice of complaint was mailed to Officer Strickland's regular mail and also certified mail. On October 2nd, 2021, Officer Strickland was found, was not found home, and the U.S. Postal Carrier left a notice at the residence of the home. Officer Strickland could claim the mail at the U.S. Post Office. However, the notice was returned to post unclaimed. A search of the TLO database discovered a possible address for Officer Strickland. However, the certified notice sent to the address was also returned unclaimed. A process server was contacted to serve the notice of complaint to the address of record, but it was reported that Officer Strickland had sold a house about a year ago and no forwarding information was available. To date, Officer Strickland has made no contact with this office or AT Post staff. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends the board revoke certification for Officer Strickland.
Thank you, Mr. Bradshaw. Any comments, questions? If not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusion of law and revoke Mr. Strickland's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to say Kevin Robinson. I'll second the motion.
Thank you to both. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Bradshaw. Next case, 2021-060, Mr. DePort. Good morning. The floor is yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Dave DePort, one of your compliance specialists. This final action case involves former Mojave County Sheriff's Deputy Kevin Loy. The issue before the board today is to determine whether to accept, reject, or modify the findings of facts and conclusions of law and impose a sanction if appropriate. The facts of this case are, on January 12, 2021, Mojave County deputies responded to the residence of Lloyd's mother-in-law, where the family had temporarily been living. The complainant, Lloyd's wife, was reporting a situation in which a family pig had been injured. She told deputies that while she was away from the house, she received a text message from Lloyd stating the family pig had been injured and its leg may be broken. Lloyd explained to her that the pig had nipped at one of the children and he picked the animal up and had thrown it from the elevated home and down the stairs, possibly breaking its leg. When Lloyd's wife returned to the house, she confronted Lloyd about the incident with the pig. During this conversation, Lloyd became angry and began yelling, which prompted his mother-in-law to come from the back bedroom and tell the couple to leave the residence and stay in a hotel. Lloyd became further upset that the family was choosing a pig and said that if Dee is being kicked out for a pig, he's going to kill it. Lloyd exited the residence and refused the request of his wife to leave and get a hotel room. The argument continued outside with Lloyd yelling until the mother-in-law stated he needed to leave before she called the police. Lloyd then left the residence. Lloyd's wife told deputies that she was fearful for having called law enforcement. According to the report, she cited past incidents of physical and emotional abuse from Lloyd. She told deputies that it was routine for Lloyd and her to argue and fight, and that following the fight, Lloyd would drive away saying that she would commit suicide. She said that she had not reported the other incidents, that she did not want to separate the child from their father. She also said that lately she had been afraid due to random statements Lloyd had made to the effect of, quote, I am able to kill people at long distance with my rifle, unquote, and I could kill anyone and bury them in Dolan. No one would know. After Lloyd left the residence, his wife began receiving text messages from him that stated, quote, thanks, I don't have a job anymore, unquote, and quote, I don't care anymore, bye, won't see him again, be kind to the boys, unquote. Efforts by the Mojave County Sheriff's Office to locate Lloyd were successful with the assistance of the Nevada Highway Patrol, who located Lloyd in a parking lot of the Las Vegas area Walmart. On January 20th, 2021, Lloyd submitted to a post-Miranda interview with the Mojave County Sheriff's Office. Lloyd gave the same basic account of the events concerning the injury to the pig and the text messages concerning his children. However, he denied throwing the pig down the stairs, instead saying he tossed it outside. Lloyd was issued a criminal citation for disorderly conduct, domestic violence, and cruelty to animals. The criminal case was later dismissed by the Mojave County Attorney's Office. Based on the criminal report, the Mojave County Sheriff's Office sustained allegations of policy violation and terminated Lloyd from employment in February 2021. The board initiated proceedings against the peace officer certification of Deputy Lloyd during the October 20, 2021 board meeting. Per Arizona Post policy, complaint notices were mailed to Mr. Lloyd's aggressive record. One was sent by regular mail that was not returned to Arizona Post, and one was sent by certified mail, which was returned undelivered. A computerized database check was conducted and revealed another possible residential address for Mr. Lloyd, and another certified letter was sent on November 22, 2021, which was also returned to Post. I had attempted to leave telephone messages to the listed number of Mr. Lloyd, but had been unsuccessful. To date, neither Lloyd nor anyone representing him has contacted Arizona Post to request a hearing. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board impose a 27-month suspension of Lloyd's peace officer certification, beginning October 20th, 2021, and ending February 3rd, 2024, inclusive. And please note that Deputy Lloyd's peace officer certification last date is February 3rd, 2024. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pork. Any questions? Comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson.
Go ahead, Professor.
Okay, I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and suspend Mr. Lloyd's peace officer certification beginning October 20th, 2021 and ending February 3rd, 2024, at which time his peace officer certification will lapse.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye, motion carries. Moving on to new cases. Thank you, Mr. Sport. New cases. First case, 2021-121. Ms. Blanco, the floor is yours. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Michelle Bogle, one of your compliance specialists. This case involves former Pima Community College Police Department Officer Anthony French. On July 2nd, 2021, a female dispatcher with the Pima Community College Police Department named Gabriella reported misconduct on the part of Officer Anthony French. She stated on June 27, 2021, Officer French fondled her breasts and genitals without her consent. A criminal investigation conducted by the Pima County Sheriff's Office revealed that on the night of the incident, Gabriella was working the midnight shift and Officer French was ending his swing shift when he returned to the station to secure his patrol vehicle. They engaged in a personal conversation that turned uncomfortable for Gabriella, and Officer French determined that she was working alone in dispatch. Officer French asked Gabriella to have sexual intercourse with no strings attached and perform oral sex on him in a nearby bathroom. When Gabriella refused, Officer French asked her to shake hands to make sure that they were leaving on good terms. Gabriella claimed as they shook hands, Officer French pulled Gabriella close and attempted to kiss her. Gabriella turned away from him, and when she did, Officer French groped her breast and groin over her clothes. Gabriella noted Officer French's watery eyes, odd facial expressions, vulgar language, and peculiar mannerisms. Officer French asked Gabriella to expose her breast to him again. Frightened for her safety, she exposed herself to Officer French, and he touched her breast under her bra. In an interview with investigators, Officer French admitted he asked Gabriella to have sex with him because he was getting a good vibe, and he thought there was a mutual attraction. When Gabriella refused his advancements, they agreed to shake hands. He admitted he touched her breast and waist with his hands while they were pressing against one another. Gabriella unbuttoned and pulled down her shirt for him. Then he put his face in her cleavage and touched her breast with his hands. Officer French resigned from the agency on July 21st, 2021. A Pima County grand jury indicted Officer French on two counts of sexual abuse, a Class 5 felony, on August 11, 2021. The criminal case is pending and no court date has been set. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. Does the board have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Blanco. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. French's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Johnson, thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-174. Ms. Blanco, back to you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, this is another case that Mr. Johnson has recused for, but we still have a call.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Blanco.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Michelle Blanco again. My next case involves former Arizona State University police officer, or Lieutenant Joseph Morrell. Lieutenant Morrell was employed by ASUPD from March 31st, 2014 to May 2nd, 2021. On April 15, 2021, ASUPD Lieutenant Dustin Nelson reported to his commander that Lieutenant Morrell submitted a timesheet that did not accurately reflect the hours he actually worked on April 14, 2021. Lieutenant Melton claimed Lieutenant Morrell reported he worked a 10-hour shift when he left early, only working 7 hours. The internal investigation was initiated. ASUPD conducted a review of records to include reviewing Lieutenant Morrell's timesheet, surveillance footage of Lieutenant Morrell's personal vehicle arriving and leaving the station parking lot, CAD activity, radio transmissions, electronic card key access, and witness statements of the last 30 days, and located 3 dates where Lieutenant Morrell falsified his timesheet. Lieutenant Morrell misrepresented the amount of time he actually worked reported on March 26th, April 14th, and April 15th. On these 3 separate dates, he reported he worked a total of 25 hours when he actually only worked a total of 16 and a half hours with an eight and a half hour deficiency. On March 26, 2021, Lieutenant Morrell was at work approximately 6 hours. He submitted a timesheet claiming 10 hours. On April 14, 2021, Lieutenant Morrell was at work 7 hours. However, he initially submitted a timesheet indicating he worked 10 hours, and he also claimed 10 hours shift differential. On April 14th, Lieutenant Morrell was scheduled to qualify at the range, therefore altering his regular shift, making him ineligible for shift differential. Lieutenant Morrell reported to the station after qualifications and made comments to fellow employees that he was leaving early. Lieutenant Morrell amended his timesheet and indicated he worked a total of 8 hours with 2 hours of vacation. On April 15, 2021, Lieutenant Morrell was at work 3 hours. He reported he worked 7 hours with 2 hours of vacation. Lieutenant Morrell is a non-exempt employee. His hourly pay rate is $49.05. Therefore, his erroneous time reporting cost to AFUPD approximately $416.92. Lieutenant Morrell was interviewed on April 28, 2021. He claimed he was experiencing personal hardships in his life and characterized these errors as unintentional and an oversight. Lieutenant Morrell previously has been counseled on his abuse of sick time, and it was noted he was taking sick days before and after his regular scheduled vacation days. Lieutenant Morrell was known to constantly use vacation, sick, and comp time as quickly as he earned it. These were aggravating factors when determining the severity of his discipline. Lieutenant Morrell's supervisor had no knowledge he was leaving early. He also did not have any work-related business to conduct outside his normal scheduled work hours. ASUPD sustained various policy violations against him to include falsification of time cards. Termination was recommended, however, Lieutenant Morrell resigned in lieu of termination on May 21, 2021. Additional research into the number of hours Lieutenant Morrell actually worked compared to the numbers of hours he reported on his time cards could not be conducted as ASU's video system only retains footage for 30 days. No criminal charges were submitted or filed against Lieutenant Morrell by ASUPD. Based on these facts of the case, staff recommends the board to initiate proceedings. Does the board have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Blanco. Questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson.
Go ahead, sir.
I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Morrell's peace officer certification.
Thank you. We have a second by Lisa. Thank you both. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you both. Next case, 2020-106. Mr. Caldwell, the floor is yours and good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, Bill Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. First of my two cases today is for Nathan Schisler, formerly an officer with the Mesa Police Department. On December 9, 2019, at approximately 1942 hours, Mesa Police Department officers responded to a local sports bar that were called by a group of disorderly male patrons. The group of males initially refused to ID themselves, and some appeared to be intoxicated. A man in the group named Randy was described as agitated and uncooperative. It should be noted that Randy was over 6 feet tall and weighed approximately 375 pounds. Randy attempted to walk away, and a Mesa officer grabbed his arm. Randy pushed that officer's arm, and other officers pointed their tasers at him. A struggle ensued, and Officer Chisler moved in to assist. When he did, he discharged his weapon, striking Randy one time. Officer Chisler then holstered his weapon and requested fire and medical assistance. We'd like to show you body cam footage of the shooting right now. Sort of a point of clarification, the actual footage you're going to be seeing is one of the officers that was at the scene. It's not actually Officer Chisler's body cam.
Sure.
You are.
Your hands behind your back, man.
You have been aggressive. You're finally calming down.
Stay back. Get your hand behind your back.
Hospitalized after being shot and then charged with various criminal offenses, but he was acquitted after a jury trial in Maricopa County Superior Court. Officer Chisler told investigators that the male subjects at the scene were intoxicated and aggressive, that Randy may have been armed, and that attempts to safely control him were unsuccessful. Investigators specifically asked Officer Chisler if the weapon went off due to an accidental discharge. He responded that he intentionally fired at Randy S., essentially in response to a perceived threat. Makes the PD sustain various allegations against Officer Chisler, and he was terminated. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office submitted a direct complaint in court alleging Officer Chisler committed the offense of aggravated assault. After a two-day preliminary hearing, Superior Court Judge Starr dismissed the charges, stating there was insufficient probable cause to proceed. I'd be glad to answer any questions about this case that the board members might have.
Thank you, sir. Questions, comments?
I do have a question. Again, it's some of these use of force cases I have concern about. This thing has gone through the judicial process. Departments have their policies as to what's in policy, what's out of policy, and that for a lot of agencies is arbitrary and capricious, to say the least. But I'm not sure with this case. He's no longer with the agency. He's been terminated. Is that correct?
That's correct, but he's challenging the termination via the civil service process.
Okay. They charged the suspect in this case, right?
Randy, they charged with various offenses. He was acquitted. I think other members of the group that he was with also faced criminal charges. I do not know what the status or what the outcome of the adjudication of those charges was.
Okay, but acquitted in a jury trial, in other words, there's probable cause that existed to affect the arrest, to the point at which the county attorney was willing to take it to trial, which is making quite a statement.
They did. They charged. There were various charges against Randy, including aggravated assault, obstruction, resisting arrest, trespassing, and disorderly conduct. My understanding is that by the time it went to trial, all those charges were dropped, and the only one he was facing at trial was resisting arrest, and that was the one that the jury acquitted him on.
Okay. And then they submitted charges on this officer. But
actually, it was a rather unique set of circumstances. My understanding was that the county attorney's office submitted a direct complaint in court, and then they went to a probable cause or preliminary hearing, which, again, my understanding was 2 days. And at the conclusion of that hearing, the judge determined there was insufficient probable cause to proceed.
Wait.
thinking?
Well, my concern is, why are we sending this to an ALJ to discern the facts of if Mesa PD feels as though he violated their policies, and Mesa PD should make that determination as to whether he's employed there or he's not employed there. But I think we're starting to have these dynamic situations where split-second decisions are made, and I'm not saying whether he acted properly, improperly. I wasn't standing in his shoes. But I'm reading a couple of these cases here today, and I'm growing more and more concerned that it's nice for people to sit in air-conditioned offices and sit up here in these rooms that are nice and peaceful and tranquil when we have officers out there making split-second decisions. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree with what this young man did, but I think that's up to the Mesa Police Department and how to discern to deal with it. But if we're going to start becoming the officer-involved shooting review committee for every police agency, then I think we probably need to revisit what our mission is here. So I'd make motion that we go back for age. Well, I'm sorry, you're not there yet. I apologize. I'll stand fast.
Well, and I'll add on to what the director's saying on this too, is even their Mesa PD firearms training unit did not believe he violated, the officer violated any policies. And I, that's just one opinion, but again, I think we need to be very careful on this and the dynamics and the landscape of policing right now that we don't get overreaching, I could say, on that. So that's just my 2 cents.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, and if you notice, this is one of those cases we did not give you a recommendation on. Again, we're trying to get an idea from the board on how you'd like us to proceed on these cases moving forward. So that's why we did not provide any type of recommendation.
I noticed that too, so... Thank you, Director. Any comments, Mr. Johnson?
I just want to make a clarifying question or ask a clarifying question. The language that you all intend in that recommendation section is that you're not making any recommendation, as opposed to you're not saying to the board that you recommend that the board take no action.
That is absolutely correct, sir.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I'd like to ask the director a question with regard to these cases, because we keep... At least for me and a lot of them, we keep coming up against the same thing. And you made the comment just a minute ago, not exactly, but to the effect, you're trying to determine what it is the board wants out of these cases, what we want to see and what we don't want to see. And I know we've dealt with that with DUI and things such as that. I'm trying to get a grasp as to what we are seeing, what we're not seeing. I don't know how many officer-involved shootings there were in the state of Arizona this last year. I'm not sure for every department. I can speak to my own, but I can't say for every department. There's probably, you can always find something tactical or some issue with an officer-involved shooting, some minor thing that could be better. I mean, it's like life and anything we do, right? But what is it we're trying to discern here with these as the easy post board? I just really am struggling with some of these use of force situations that we've been seeing. We all watch this video right now. Everything seems pretty cool, and all of a sudden it's not. Again, I don't know if this officer was right or wrong. That's up to Mesa PD to figure out. And if he did something criminal, then that's up to the county attorney to figure out. And as I recall, county attorney writes a letter to you and says whether or not you violated the law at the conclusion of everything. So I'm not sure where we're involved in some of this.
I can tell you specifically for this case, this was a termination notice that came in marked for misconduct because he was fired from his agency based on the situation. So by our rule, we open a case on those when they come to us for misconduct, that we review them, and then we do have the ability to administratively close them. We use that very sparingly, and we have a process internally to make sure we're doing that fairly. But in this case, and that's why I said we provided it to you, with no recommendation because, again, it is a unique situation, but it did come to us through a termination notice marked for misconduct.
Thank you, everyone. Any further comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we go back to agency discretion with the Mesa Police Department.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
At Lisa there. Thank you, Chief, too. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Next case, 2019-097. Mr. Caldwell, back to you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is my second case for you today involving former Officer Inslee of the Superior Police Department. In late 2019, a local attorney alleged misconduct on the part of various officers in the Superior PD. The resulting internal investigation was eventually provided to AZ Post staff. Reports indicated that on March 10th, 2017, Superior officers were involved in a pursuit with a vehicle driven by Mr. Aaron M. The suspect eluded capture, but made his way back to town and was located the next day by officers Hensley and Marsman, who were able to take him into custody after a brief struggle. This time we'd like to show you body camera footage of the incident. As a point of reference, you're going to see Officer Marsman's body cam and then Officer Hensley's body cam. Also, Officer Hensley is going to be the sort of contact officer with this. He's going to be the main person that you're going to be seeing.
Exactly what's up. Roll over on your belly. Do it now. Go. Cuff him up, dude. Cuff him up, dude. You're gonna get tased. Get down. Get your ass down.
I'm down. What the fuck?
You know exactly what's up.
Well, what the fuck are you doing?
Put your hands on your back. Thank you.
Later on the same day, a male named Clint P. came to the Superior Police Department to check on the status of his friend, Aaron. After a brief interaction with officers, Clint was also taken into custody, and we'd like to show you that short video now. Just as a point of reference, the body camera footage you're going to see now is from Officer Gill, who's working the desk at Superior PD. And again, Officer Ensley is going to be the main contact officer that you're going to see interacting with Mr. Peterson. You go ahead.
That's okay. You're here to pick up your friend? Okay, 1 second. Hey, Ensley, can you come here a minute? Our friend's friend is here. Or Rusty. It is. Well, he's here to pick him up. Yeah, he's under arrest. He's going to jail. He's not being released.
How did you get in touch with him? Huh? How did you get in touch with him?
He told me from the gas
station. What did he say?
He said, I need a ride.
Remember what time he called you?
No.
No, just this morning sometime.
Do you have an ID?
I do.
Let's have a look.
No.
What's that?
Is that necessary?
Yeah, it is.
Why?
Is there any reason why you're going?
Do
you have ID? Yeah, you involved yourself in a criminal investigation involving our
I didn't involve myself in anything. I came to pick up my friend.
Are you serious? Are you serious? Do you have ID?
Do I have to carry ID?
You have to identify yourself to the police when they have a valid reason to contact you.
Am I of a crime?
Yeah, it's called refusal to give truthful name.
My name is Clint Peterson.
Thank you, Clint. Not a good idea. Now, what do you want, Clint?
I came to pick up my friend.
How do we know you're not part of this?
Part of what?
Your boy ran from the cops in a long pursuit last night. How'd you get in touch with him?
He did not run from the cops in a long pursuit last night.
Is that right? And how do you know that?
Because he was with me.
Where?
In AJ.
Were you driving, maybe?
No. Wait, who's your friend?
Not adding up, Clint.
Who's your friend?
Try again.
What's his name?
Nah, we got
to call you now. You're under arrest, man.
False
info
for what?
Do not fight us!
You're
under arrest! Stop resisting! You're under arrest! Put your hands behind your back! You're under arrest! You can go to jail with your buddy now. Yep.
Are you serious, Clint?
You're under arrest for false reporting law enforcement and resisting arrest.
False reporting? What did I report talking?
You were not with your buddy last night,
and he wasn't with you either, so cut the shit.
Hey,
down
now.
This might be up first.
Who's in there? Is anyone in there still?
No.
Shabby.
All right.
Scratch 27 off there.
It's okay. Phillip is getting it.
I have no idea.
Tony,
Clint was charged with hindering prosecution and resisting arrest. The charges were later dismissed. The internal investigation sustained allegations against Officer Embry relating to the arrest of both Aaron M. and Clint P. Regarding Aaron, Superior PD concluded Officer Embry violated policies relating to use of force, failure to summon medical aid, and discourtesy to a citizen. In addition, Officer Endley submitted a report about the arrest of Aaron M. that was inaccurate. He claimed he struggled with the suspect for a few minutes when the use of force was actually less than a minute. He also wrote that Aaron M. was handcuffed after being tased when the video shows Aaron was handcuffed before Officer Endley deployed his taser. Regarding Clint P., Superior PD concluded Officer Endley used excessive force and essentially made an arrest with no probable cause. The chief of police wrote the following about Officer Endley's actions towards Clint P. Quote, reluctance to provide you with ID is not a crime, and going hands-on with him when he displayed no signs whatsoever of physical aggression is unwarranted, excessive, and can be perceived as taking one's personal liberties away from them through the color of your authority. Those actions are disturbing. These actions are disturbing. applying force to effect an arrest on a person who is not providing the answers you wanted to hear and is not physically confrontational is unwarranted, unquote. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that the members might have. Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Any questions, comments? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson.
Go ahead, Professor.
I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Inslee's peace officer certification.
Second.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Minnie. Director Silbert. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye. Saying aye.
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 Any opposed, say aye. Saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Next case, 2021-125. Director, who's going to... Mr. Bork, you going to handle this case?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Dave Tworek, one of your compliance specialists, and I will be presenting this summary prepared by compliance specialist Delton. On May 21st, 2020, at approximately 10:46 p.m., officers John Ferragamo and Jeff Cook responded to an emergency radio call for service regarding domestic violence. The upstairs neighbors told 911 he heard a verbal argument between an unknown male and female. Officers Ferragamo and Cook arrived at the apartment complex at the same time and walked to the apartment. Officer Ferragamo knocked on the apartment door and announced Phoenix Police. Ryan opened the door and stepped outside while holding a black handgun in his right hand, held downwards against his leg while facing Officer Ferragamo. Ryan yelled, "What?" When Officer Ferragamo saw the gun in Ryan's hand, he backpedaled a few steps, drew his duty weapon, and pointed it at Ryan, who was moving the gun behind his back. At the same time this was occurring, Officer Cook fired three rounds from his city-issued firearm, striking Ryan twice. After the shooting occurred, Officer Ferragamo took Ryan's girlfriend, who had exited his apartment, away from the immediate scene, while Officer Cook stayed near Ryan and watched the open front door of the apartment. Officer Cook immediately requested fire. Ryan was pronounced deceased by Phoenix Fire Department personnel at 11:10 p.m. Neither Officer Ferragamo nor Officer Cook were injured. Criminal investigators with the Phoenix Police Department submitted their report to the Maricopa County Attorney's Office for their review. On February 1, 2021, the County Attorney's Office authored a letter of declination stating in part, based on the information submitted in the Phoenix Incident Report, it is the opinion of the County Attorney's Office that Officer Cook did not commit any act that warrants criminal prosecution. A professional standards bureau investigation of the shooting was conducted, and Officer Cook's use of force on Ryan was found to be within policy. However, on August 3, 2021, Officer Cook's employment was terminated from the Phoenix Police Department for failing to render first aid to Ryan. Officer Cook maintained he was holding on the open door as he felt there could be some type of threat inside the apartment, as did Officer Ferragamo. On body-worn camera audio, Officer Ferragamo can be heard telling Officer Cook to hold the door. The handgun Ryan was armed with was still lying on the ground, unsecured in the doorway just inside the apartment. Officer Cook stated, quote, "I didn't render any medical aid at the time because, and even John said something to me. He's like, 'Hey man, we're holding that door. We're not going in. My first priority was to hold on that door because I still do not know what I'm dealing with on the inside,'" unquote. Officer Ferragamo received no discipline for failing to render aid in this incident. A Phoenix Civil Service Board hearing is pending, and Arizona staff members are not making any recommendation for board action in this case. And I would be happy to answer any questions before my time.
Thank you, sir. And there's a lot to be said here. And I'm just going to make the first comment on this one. You go to an in-progress call. Guy comes out with a gun. Deadly force was used, obviously rightfully. It's been seen by both the criminal side and the administrative side. I don't know why he lost his job. I'm a little perplexed on that one, to be honest with you. So that's just my two cents.
I, I'd add to this. I think tactical doctrine will dictate you still have an open door. You don't know what the threats are inside. You're going to hold on the inside. But by the same measure, unless I'm mistaken, please clarify, did he not roll fire immediately?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and his partner said to him, we're going to hold that door. I don't know what the levels of seniority are there, but that's just absolute tactical doctrine, any roll fire.
Yes.
And then at some point, as I read in here, he not only rolled fire and not only held the door, he started to talk to the guy, in a sense trying to I don't know if the word comfort would be the right word, but at least trying to say, hey, are you still here, trying to converse with him as we do in those critical situations when any of us have dealt with somebody who's dying. I concur with the sheriff.
This is Lisa.
Yes, Lisa.
I would move that we take no further action.
Thank you, Lisa. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Chief. Any further comments? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify saying aye.
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 All opposed, saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2020-174. Mr. Sport, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Again, I will be presenting this case on behalf of Compliance Specialist Hill. On March 31st, 2020, Officer Kevin Moy and his wife, Ashley, were involved in a verbal argument at their residence. Initially, Ashley alleged that Officer Moy engaged in a physical altercation with her, in which he grabbed Ashley by the wrist and pushed her down onto the kitchen floor, in which she received a broken arm. After the altercation, Ashley drove herself to her parents' home. They brought her to an urgent care facility for medical treatment, where she was diagnosed with a fractured arm. The Surprise Police Department investigated this incident, and after Ashley was interviewed, Officer Moe was arrested at his residence without incident. Although Officer Moe initially declined to be interviewed, he later answered questions at the Surprise Police Station. Officer Moe said he and Ashley were arguing when he walked into the kitchen, where she confronted him and they continued to argue. As Officer Moe attempted to leave the kitchen, he had to walk past Ashley, as she was blocking the only path out of the kitchen. Officer Moe said Ashley told him she wanted to punch him and raised her fist. As he tried to walk past Ashley, he had to push her out of the way from him, and she fell. Both Officer Moe and Ashley's children separately told officers that they did not witness anything after going to their bedroom, but they did hear their parents yelling and arguing. Officer Moe was arrested and charged with one count of aggravated assault and domestic violence. On May 11, 2020, Ashley submitted a sworn affidavit to the Maricopa County Superior Court describing how she had been intoxicated the night of March 31, 2020, and had slipped on beads that had spilled from a container she had thrown. Ashley wrote that she fell due to her level of intoxication, and she believed she would not have fallen if not for being intoxicated. Ashley also wrote that the statement she made that night to law enforcement implicating her husband, Officer Moe, were made because she was intoxicated, angry, and emotional. Due to Ashley recanting her allegations of assault, this case was dismissed in Maricopa County Superior Court. In July 2020, the Peoria Police Department determined there was no misconduct on the part of Officer Moe and that he acted in self-defense when he pushed his wife away as she blocked his exit from the kitchen as he was attempting to walk away from the confrontation. No misconduct was obtained. Arizona Post staff members are not making a recommendation for board action in the case, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sir, any questions, comments?
I have a legal question.
Johnson?
In these cases where there's been some action in Superior Court at the probable cause level, what is our level, actually, our evidentiary standard for the initiation of proceedings?
And I'll answer that. I'm your legal advisor for this case. To initiate a proceeding at the board level at this point is a low threshold. It would be akin to initiating a civil action in Superior Court, filing a complaint. And so it's the wanting of the board for a case to go to a judge to apply legal standards to make a determination and to bring that evidence back to the board for its decision. So it is a low threshold standard. It is not a probable cause standard. That would not be a direct equation. As lawyers, we can appreciate the Rule 11 standard for filing a civil complaint. It would be akin to that, Mr. Johnson.
Can you explain that, the Rule 11?
Which is, so long as there are facts in evidence that that justify an allegation and not to a conclusion and not even to a probable cause standard, the case may proceed into litigation. So by reading the overview, if you find as a board that there are facts in the overview, sufficient facts to take it to a judge to apply legal standards and to weigh the credibility of the evidence and to come back to you with an ALJ decision, then the board may proceed and initiate.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions, comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Make motion to take no action, send it back to agency discretion.
Thank you, Director. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Barton. Next case, 2020-158. Ms. Hawes, good morning. The floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Kathy Hawes, one of your compliance specialists. On April 29, 2020, Officer Carlos Castaneda Noriega, formerly with the Tucson Police Department, was detained in Glendale, Arizona by Glendale PD due to a domestic violence investigation involving him and his girlfriend Jasmine. This incident was because Jasmine did not tell him the towel he was using to take a shower was the same towel she used on their newborn who had gone to the bathroom on the towel. The argument escalated to the point where Jasmine had injuries to her left cheek area, her right hand, her elbow, forearm, left leg, and ankles. Castaneda Noriega had a small cut in his inner lip, a scrape to the interior of his left ear, and damaged eyeglasses. Glendale PD submitted the criminal case to the Glendale City Prosecutor's Office, who ultimately declined to issue charges. On May 11, 2020, 12 days after the initial domestic violence incident, Castaneda Noriega was involved in a second criminal investigation in which he was the victim of assault and criminal damage by his friend Gabriella, who slapped him on his face and keyed both his vehicle and his parents' vehicle. Instead of walking away and removing himself from the situation, he filmed the incident and continued to follow Gabriella while she was committing these crimes, causing her to re-engage and attempt to hit him again, telling her, "You're hitting a cop. Do you understand that?" Apparently using his authority as a peace officer to intimidate her. He did not tell Glendale PD of his past intimate relationship with Gabriella and did not notify his chain of command about this incident. TPD sustained allegations of off-duty misdemeanor, actions off-duty, failure to notify a supervisor, and untruthfulness. He resigned from TPD. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Halls. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Chief Officers, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Castaneda Noriega's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2020-125. Ms. Hawes, back to you.
Mr. Chairman, this is another case that Mr. Johnson has recused.
All right, thank you. Ms. Hawes, all yours.
In his position as captain with the Pima County Sheriff's Department, Harold James was involved in a comprehensive disciplinary investigation involving one of his subordinates, Lieutenant Cameron. The investigation and review of the matter occurred over a protracted period from January 2019 to February 2019. Captain James made two separate suspension recommendations regarding Lieutenant Cameron's conduct in writing and then orally to Sheriff Napier. He also affirmed his three-day suspension recommendation to an attorney with the Pima County Attorney's Office who was representing Pima County Sheriff's Department in this matter. Lieutenant Cameron appealed his discipline, which resulted in a hearing before the Pima County Law Enforcement System Merit Council, or LEMSIC. While testifying under oath to LEMSIC, Captain James recanted his disciplinary recommendation, stating he was ordered to recommend a suspension. He admitted he was not forthright with Sheriff Napier when he was asked twice about his recommendation, even though during his Department of Public Safety internal affairs investigation, he was asked if he was honest and forthcoming when he communicated to his chain of command about Lieutenant Cameron's disciplinary case, when he responded, yes. Based on the DPS investigation and post-review of all the documentation, it appears Captain James was either untruthful with his chain of command and with the deputy county attorney representing the sheriff's department, or he provided false testimony during the merit council hearing. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Any questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to initiate proceedings against Mr. James, peace officer certification.
Thank you, Director. Is there a second?
Jamie Kelly.
Please.
Kelly, thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, you're going to say an aye.
Aye.
All opposed, anybody saying nay? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Haas. Next case, 2020-121. Ms. Heckel, floor is yours. Good morning.
Good morning, or afternoon. Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Arlene Heckel, one of your compliance specialists. Trooper Cullen worked for the Arizona Department of Public Safety from October of 2019 to May of 2020. In April of 2020, Trooper Cullen was scheduled to work an off-duty job at 2,200 hours. He arrived at a business complex close to the off-duty job early so he could write some reports that were due. He was in full uniform and was driving his marked patrol vehicle. A friend of his, Eve, asked to come visit him while he was riding, so he told her where he was parked, and she arrived. Trooper Cullen got out of his patrol vehicle, and they stood between the cars to talk. They started flirting, and then she kneeled down in front of him and performed oral sex on him. When it was completed, Trooper Cullen began tucking in his shirt, and another DPS vehicle drove into the lot. Trooper Cullen did not know the trooper that drove by but got the vehicle number. He also did not know if the other trooper had seen or witnessed anything that had occurred. Trooper Cullen then texted a fellow trooper, Trooper Johnson, to see if he knew this other officer that drove through the lot, who was Sergeant Jones. He also explained to Trooper Johnson what had occurred. And then Trooper Johnson notified his chain of command about the possible misconduct by Trooper Cullen. An investigation began and Trooper Cullen was interviewed. He admitted to meeting Eve at a convenience store the night before this meeting. He admitted to telling her where he was at so she could come visit. He admitted allowing her to perform oral sex on him and that he knew it was wrong. DPS sustained allegations of conduct adverse to the department. Since Trooper Cullen was a probationary employee, his probation was revoked and he was terminated on May 6, 2020. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Heckel.
Mr. Chairman, I have to recuse myself in this case.
Let the record be noted. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly. I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Cullen's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
A second.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, signal by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Ms. Echo, back to you at case number 2021-131.
Specialist Arlene Heckel again. Trooper Laurie works for the Arizona Department of Public Safety from June 1st, 2020 to April 20th, 2021. Prior to working in law enforcement, Trooper Lowry has served in the Army from 2003 to 2012 as an enlisted personnel. He was accepted into the warrant officer program in the Army and then served at that rank from 2012 to 2014. He was then hired and worked for Lake Havasu City Police Department from 2014 to 2020. Trooper Lowry began the hiring process for a lateral position with DPS in January of 2020. He completed all the paperwork, interviewed, and completed the hiring process. Part of that paperwork included a DD-214 that he submitted to show he had been honorably discharged from the Army. The background investigator requested all military records as well, and he was hired for DPS in June of 2020. In April of 2021, the background investigator received the military records on Trooper Lowry. And he noticed some additional information. He noticed Trooper Lowry had two DD-214s, one for his enlisted service, which was already in the packet, and one for his warrant officer service, which he had not seen before. The second DD-214 showed that Trooper Lowry had received a general under honorable conditions discharge for unacceptable conduct in the military. The records also had copies of a military investigation for an extramarital affair that Trooper Lowry was involved in. The punishment for this misconduct was to be involuntarily separated from the Army with a general discharge. The background investigator went back and looked through the DPS hiring packet. There was nothing documented about the involuntary separation from the military, the second discharge that was a general, not honorable discharge, and he specifically stated he had not been in a military investigation. The background investigator told his chain of command and an internal investigation was initiated. During his internal affairs interview, Trooper Lowry did acknowledge that he had been investigated while being in the military. He admitted his separation was due to his misconduct, and it was involuntary separation, and he could not remember what documents he had provided in his hiring process, but thought they only needed one DD-214. On April 30, 2021, DPS sustained allegations of fraud or misrepresentation in securing employment and dishonesty. Trooper Lowry was still on probation, so his probation was revoked and he was terminated. On June 11, 2021, former Trooper Lowry contacted me and advised me he had documents to support his case. Most of the documents I already had, but he did provide me with an email that he had sent to the background investigator in May of 2020. With that email, he had sent copies of his two DD-214s. However, the one was for his enlisted service, and the second one for his warrant officer service was a member one copy, which does not include any of his character for service or type of separation. The background investigators know that this would not be accepted by Arizona Post staff as any kind of proof for military documentation, that we always need the member four copy, not the member one copy. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, I'll recuse myself from this case, Chairman.
Let the record be noted. Thank you, Ms. Heckel. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Lowry's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signal by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2020-086. Ms. Heckel, back to you.
Compliance Specialist Arlene Heckel again. Officer Asuna works for the Gila River Police Department from September of 2019 to May of 2020. On March 9th, 2020, Casa Grande Police Department received a 911 call from a woman named Brandy. She advised her husband, who was a police officer, was getting aggressive and she needed assistance. The phone then went dead. The 911 dispatcher called her back, and Brandy advised her husband had taken her phone and hung up. She advised her husband's name was Hector Osuno. The dispatcher realized that Hector was on another 911 line reporting a domestic situation. When the Casa Grande police officers arrived and investigated the situation, Officer Osuno was arrested for disorderly conduct, domestic violence, and preventing the use of a telephone in an emergency. He was booked into the Pinal County Jail. Officer Osuno was placed on administrative leave from the department, and during the time he was on leave, he was interviewed by Internal Affairs numerous times. Each time, he maintained it was only a verbal argument, and he denied ever taking Brandy's phone. He was also served with an order of protection so he could not contact his wife or his daughters, and he was ordered to give up his firearms for a period of 1 year. Gila River PD sustained allegations of failure to meet acceptable work standards, misrepresenting Gila River community, inattention to duties, engaging in illegal activity, and conducting personal life in a manner that will not interfere with job performance. On May 4, 2020, Officer Osuno resigned in lieu of termination. On September 8, 2020, former Officer Osuno entered into a deferred judgment program by pleading guilty to disorderly conduct. On September 14, 2021, all requirements of the program were met and the case was dismissed. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Heckel. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I move to initiate proceedings against Ms. Wilson for peace officer certification.
Thank you, Director. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Chief. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Echo. Next case, 2021-140. Ms. Darcy Nichols. The floor is yours. Good morning. Or good afternoon. It's been a long morning.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Darcy Nichols, one of your compliance specialists. This case involves former Avondale Police Officer Kyle Bradshaw. On July 9, 2021, Officer Kyle Bradshaw was driving his personal vehicle off-duty when he was involved in a two-vehicle collision in Glendale, Arizona. Responding Glendale officers observed signs of intoxication to include bloodshot, watery eyes, red flushed face, slurred speech, and the odor of intoxicating substance coming from his breath. Officer Bradshaw stated he had come from meeting with friends but had only consumed water prior to driving and the accident. While on scene, Officer Bradshaw made several unsuccessful attempts to convince Glendale Officer Castillo to accompany him to the passenger side of his personal vehicle to show him something. Officer Bradshaw then asked Officer Castillo when he graduated from the academy. It was after Officer Castillo asked Officer Bradshaw what he was implying by that question that Officer Bradshaw identified himself as an Avondale police officer and produced his badge from his pocket. Officer Bradshaw was arrested for DUI at 17:35 hours. A search warrant was served on him at 18:46 hours to obtain a blood sample that resulted in a BAC of 0.167. Officer Bradshaw was uncooperative during the blood draw, refusing both to extend his arm and to relax it when asked by the officers. He refused to sign the implied consent affidavit upon being served with it. Officer Bradshaw was released in lieu of detention pending DUI and civil trial charges in this Glendale Municipal Court. This case is still pending. Officer Bradshaw submitted a letter of resignation to the Avondale Police Department on August 2nd, 2021. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson.
Go ahead, Professor.
Can I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Bradshaw's peace officer certification?
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Director. Any further discussion?
It's Lisa. I just have a question for our counsel. And I apologize that I'm having a brain drain here. I was under the impression that if it was over 0.15, we were looking at these cases if they involved aggravating circumstances such as having children in the car, and it wasn't necessarily something that the board was going to be involved in. Am I wrong?
Actually, Lisa, if it's below a 0.15,
with aggravating factors we presented to the board. If it's above a 0.15, we present those to the board regardless if there's aggravating factors or not.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. We do a motion? We did a motion already. Got a second? Okay. Just want to make sure. One more. All right, any further discussion? What's that? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-177. Ms. Nichols, back to you.
Thank you, Darcy Nichols, compliance specialist. This case involves Goodyear Police Officer Recruit Matthew Tarrant. Matthew Tarrant submitted an application to become a police officer with Goodyear Police Department and was appointed on August 24, 2021. I began the new hire audit on his file on August 30th, 2021, and discovered that during a pre-polygraph interview, Recruit Karen had disclosed to Laura of Wells Polygraphy Services that he had sexually touched a 17- or 18-year-old partner when she was incapacitated by alcohol. Recruit Karen told Laura that he was 22 years old at the time of the occurrence. I requested additional information regarding this disclosure via Goodyear Police Department background investigator Detective Swain. On September 1st, 2021, I received further explanation on the disclosure from Detective Swain after he had been in contact with Recruit Karen. In an email, Recruit Karen explained that he was approximately 22 to 23 years of age and a female was approximately 20 to 21. He said they kissed and began, quote unquote, messing around while at a party and consuming alcohol. He stated they fell asleep on the couch together and awoke fully clothed the next morning. Due to the discrepancies in the accounts provided, I again asked Detective Swain to obtain further explanation. On September 2nd, 2021, Detective Swain contacted Laura at Wells Polygraphy Services. Laura indicated that Recruit Karen told her during the pre-polygraph interview he had sexual contact with a subject who was possibly 17 to 18 years of age when he was 21 to 22. During that same interview, he also said he fondled the female subject without her consent. Laura provided Detective Swain with a copy of the interview video, and he verified that this information was in fact disclosed during the interview. Detective Swain and Goodyear Police Department Lieutenant Kirk met with Recruit Karen after obtaining this information. During that conversation, Recruit Karen told him that he was in the living room of his home in Virginia and had begun flirting and kissing a female throughout the evening. He stated he attempted to initiate sex with the female, but then was unable to remember the previous evening. He said both he and the female were fully clothed when they awoke. He said he was 22 to 23 years old at the time and she was 20 to 21. He was again asked to verify their ages and again stated he was 22 to 23 and she was 20 to 21. Detective Swain confronted Recruit Karen about the different statements he had provided. He then told Detective Swain and Lieutenant Kirk that the female was actually 17 to 18 and that he was embarrassed and scared, so he previously provided her age of 20 to 21. Recruit Karen stated that the two disclosures he had provided involved the same female and the same incident. He was unable to identify the female. Recruit Karen was terminated by the Goodyear Police Department effective September 9th. Notices were mailed to Recruit Karen's address of record informing him of a possible upcoming rule change that could affect the way cases involving denial of certification are handled by the Arizona Coast Board. The notices provided information on how Recruit Karen could request a delay in his case until the possible rule change occurred. However, neither he nor anyone representing him requested such a delay. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to initiate proceedings to deny peace officer certification to Mr. Karen.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Director. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-170. Ms. Nichols, back to you.
Thank you, Darcy Nichols, compliance specialist. This case involves Avondale Police Department recruit Niaj Dubasek. On September 1st, 2021, Avondale Police recruit Niaj Dubasek was participating in a pre-academy ride along with Avondale Police Officer Montgomery. While Officer Montgomery was engaged in apprehending a possible suspect, another Avondale officer observed recruit Dubasek leaning out of an open patrol car window and holding his phone in such a manner that seemed to indicate he was reporting the arrest. This officer informed the Avondale Sergeant on scene, Sergeant Hoosevelt, of his observation. Sergeant Hoosevelt later asked Recruit Subacher if he had recorded any part of the incident with his cell phone. He replied no and stated he was just texting his wife. Approximately 3 hours later, Recruit Subacher informed Officer Montgomery he wanted to tell him something that was bothering him. He proceeded to tell Officer Montgomery he had not recorded anything on scene earlier in the shift, but he had taken a couple of photos. Recruit Subacher said he was so excited about the job, he wanted to show the photos to his wife. He told Officer Montgomery he panicked and told Sergeant Hoosevelt he hadn't recorded the scene. Recruit Subacher, asked to speak with Sergeant Hoosevelt. Officer Montgomery contacted Sergeant Hoosevelt and arranged to drive Recruit Subacher to meet him. Upon meeting, Recruit Subacher apologized to Sergeant Hoosevelt for not being forthcoming when asked if he had recorded any part of the scene earlier in the shift. He told Sergeant Hoosevelt he hadn't taken video, but had taken photos and texted them to his wife because he was excited about the job. Recruit Subacher told Sergeant Hoosevelt he immediately felt guilty for not answering questions directly previously in the shift. The contents of Recruit Subacher's phone were not viewed by Avondale Police personnel to verify the statement. Recruit Subacher resigned from the Avondale Police Department on September 2nd, 2021, in lieu of termination. During a conversation I had with Recruit Subacher after his resignation, he maintained he had not made a recording while on scene, but had instead taken a photo. He told me he felt so guilty he had made contact with Sergeant Hoosevelt 30 minutes after initially providing him with false information, a false answer to his question. However, documents provided by the Avondale Police Department indicate Recruit Subacher waited several hours to initiate that contact with Sergeant Hoosevelt to provide him accurate information. And not 30 minutes. Notices were mailed to Recruit Subacher's address of record informing him of a possible upcoming rule change that could affect the way cases involving denial of certification are handled by the AP Post Board. The notices provided information on how Recruit Subacher could request a delay in his case until a possible rule change occurred. Recruit Subacher contacted me and expressed the desire to proceed with his case as he is attempting to become a police officer with another Arizona agency. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Comments, questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move to initiate proceedings to deny peace officer certification to Mr. Spassick.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
Chairman Kevin Robinson, I second the motion.
Thank you, Professor. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-083. Ms. Nichols, back to you.
Thank you, this case involves former Mesa Police Officer Jonathan Swanson. On the night of May 14, 2020, Officer Swanson was off duty when he left home driving his personal vehicle after consuming an unknown amount of beer. While driving through his neighborhood, Officer Swanson was involved in a single vehicle accident leaving the roadway and striking a tree in the front yard of a home. The accident occurred around 2200 hours. Officer Swanson exited his vehicle and made contact with the residents, Rita and David, who had come outside. During his interaction with the residents, Officer Swanson provided his driver's license, told the residents he was a police officer, advised them the situation was civil, and asked them repeatedly not to call the police. Officer Swanson's demeanor while dealing with the residents and his failure to honor the residents' wishes to keep his distance from Rita caused David to enter the residence and return with a baseball bat for protection. Upon returning to the front yard, David asked Officer Swanson to leave, and he and Rita went back inside. Before leaving the yard, Officer Swanson provided his phone number to Christina, a neighbor who was watching the interaction. Officer Swanson left the location of the accident and drove his vehicle the 0.2 miles back to his residence where he consumed what he reports as, quote, two large chugs from a bottle of gin and two large drinks containing an equal mixture of gin and seltzer, unquote, as well as, quote, unquote, quite a few beers. Officer Swanson, his brother, and an unidentified neighbor walked down the street towards the scene of the accident to view the damage. They changed their minds while walking and returned. to Officer Swanson's residence. At the same time they were walking, Rita was on the phone with 911 regarding the accident and was notified via text from her neighbor, Christina, that Officer Swanson was on his way back to the residence. This occurred at 22:28 hours, approximately 28 minutes after the accident. Mesa police officers were dispatched to Rita and David's residence. Upon arriving, they discovered Officer Swanson was not present, and officers responded to his residence nearby, finding him standing in the driveway holding a beer at 22:47 hours, approximately 47 minutes after the accident. Based on observed signs and symptoms of alcohol consumption and the occurrence of the accident, responding officers requested a motor officer's assistance conducting a DUI investigation. While awaiting the arrival of the motor officer, Officer Swanson repeatedly disobeyed directions, drinking from a can of seltzer water and attempting to smoke a cigarette. At one point, Officer Swanson crouched and lunged at one of the officers with balled fists, causing that officer to flinch as if he was going to be struck. Officer Swanson laughed at his reaction and hugged the officer. The motor officer arrived at 23:22 hours and arrested Officer Swanson for DUI-related crimes based on observable behaviors and the occurrence of the accident. Officer Swanson submitted to a blood draw at 0:25 hours, resulting in a BAC of 0.187. The BAC was later retrograded to 22:28 hours, which coincides with the time that Rita was on the phone with 911 and Officer Swanson was seen walking back to the residence. The resulting BAC retrograde was 0.206 to 0.245 and included the two assumptions that no alcohol had been consumed after the collision and that Officer Swanson was in the post-destructive phase. A review of initial police report witness statements revealed that Rita said she thought Officer Swanson might have been drinking prior to the accident, but she was not sure. Christina stated Officer Swanson was, quote-unquote, obviously impaired. During the administrative investigation, Officer Swanson told investigators he identified himself as an officer to Rita and David only so that they would not think he was a quote-unquote shitbag. He said he asked them not to call the police because he was trying to explain the situation was civil in nature and not because he was concerned about having consumed alcohol prior to the accident. Officer Swanson told investigators the accident was a result of being on the phone and not impairment. As a result of the administrative investigation, the Mesa Police Department sustained policy violations for conduct unbecoming an officer, DUI, using authority of position for financial gain or for obtaining privileges or favors, and discourtesy. Officer Swanson submitted a resignation memo on May 5, 2021, and was terminated on May 8. On September 8, 2021, Officer Swanson pled guilty to one count of reckless driving in the Mesa City Court. As a result, the court dismissed one count of DUI and one count of tampering with evidence. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Comments? Questions?
I have a question, Ms. Nichols. With regard to the tampering with evidence and a couple of the other things, did they clarify the fact that he went home to drink alcohol to camouflage the fact that he was already impaired?
They did ask him about that, and he said no, that he had gone back home to drink alcohol because he was so upset by the accident.
Good question. Any other questions, thoughts? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Swanson's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Director.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 All opposed, I say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-141. Ms. Nichols, your last case.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for the interruption. I need to sign off at this point. I just wanted to make you aware of that.
We will still have a quorum. Thank you, Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Professor.
Thank you.
See you next month.
Bye.
Ms. Nichols, back to you.
Thank you. Darcy Nichols, compliance specialist. The final case today involves former Avondale police officer Arturo Valenzuela Rodriguez. On March 31st, 2021, Officer Rodriguez Valenzuela was dispatched on a suspicious vehicle call for service at 20:45 hours. The complaint reported the vehicle was parked with its lights off in a vacant lot approximately 200 to 300 feet from his residence. Officer Rodriguez Valenzuela arrived in the area of the suspicious vehicle and requested a license plate check from dispatch, receiving an immediate response that the car was not stolen or wanted. Several minutes later, he cleared the call with a 3. The code is as unable to locate and corresponds with Avondale Police Department policy indicating the officer could not find the basis of the original call. Within a minute of clearing the suspicious vehicle call, Officer Valenzuela Rodriguez was dispatched to a call for service and immediately indicated he was on scene. The complainant called dispatch and learned to learn the outcome of the suspicious vehicle call. He had originally not asked to find officers. When he was told the officer was unable to locate the vehicle, the complainant stated he saw the officer stop at the suspicious vehicle, then approach the driver's side of the vehicle and quickly speak with whomever was in the vehicle. He saw the officer leave, then saw the suspicious vehicle lights turn on and the vehicle leave the vacant lot less than a minute after the officer drove away. Avondale Sergeant Beckett, Officer Valenzuela's Rodriguez's supervisor, was notified of the complainant's observation and researched the call for service. Upon seeing Officer Rodriguez Valenzuela had run a vehicle's license plate but cleared the call indicating he was unable to locate the basis of the call, Sergeant Beckett contacted Officer Rodriguez Valenzuela for clarification. Officer Rodriguez Valenzuela informed Sergeant Beckett he had located the vehicle described by the complainant in the location also described by the complainant. He stated the vehicle appeared to be unoccupied, did not appear to be stolen, and was legally parked. He said he left the call to respond to another call. Later in the same work shift, Officer Valenzuela Rodriguez contacted Sergeant Beckett and informed him that he had lied when he told him there was no one inside the suspicious vehicle. He explained he discovered an adult male and female inside the vehicle when he approached it, but saw no injuries and believed that there was nothing going on. He told them to leave. He returned to his patrol car and left then. He informed Sergeant Beckett he cleared the call with the incorrect code because he was in a hurry to respond to another call. He also indicated he was in a hurry and did not activate his body on camera. As a result of the administrative investigation, the Avondale Police Department sustained policy violations for the City of Avondale's ethics and rules of conduct policies and the Police Department's activation of body-worn camera policy. Officer Rodriguez Valenzuela was terminated by the Avondale Police Department effective August 3rd, 2021. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Any comments, questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Valenzuela Rodriguez, Peace Officer Certification.
Thank you, Chief. Do I have a second? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Next case, 2021-111, Mr. Brightshaw.
Afternoon, Chairman and members of the board. Rich Brightshaw, one of your compliance specialists. This case involves a former Scottsdale police officer, Greg Lovelace. On January 16, 2021, Officer Greg Lovelace was off-duty driving his personal vehicle that is registered to him. At approximately 10:30 p.m., Scottsdale Officer Adam, who was on duty operating a fully marked patrol vehicle, observed an older Toyota Tundra with an Arizona license plate run a red light at 70th Street and Osborne. Officer Adam then attempted to stop the vehicle for the traffic violation observed by activating his emergency light and manually operating his siren. The vehicle continued eastbound and failed to stop at another red light at Drinkwater and Osborne. Officer Adam now activates his siren continuously, and the vehicle continues eastbound, fails to stop for another red light at Miller and Osborne. At this time, Officer Adam terminates the attempted traffic stop. A sergeant and a lieutenant on duty recognized the plate and the registered owner and attempted to contact Officer Lovelace that evening by calling his personal cell phone and attempting to make contact at two known addresses, but were unsuccessful. Scottsdale PD then initiated an internal and criminal investigation. A search warrant on Officer Lovelace's phone showed his phone was in the area of 7th Street in Osborne the night that Officer Adam observed the traffic violation and attempted to stop him. The search warrant also shows that the phone tracking the same route that Officer Lovelace took on that night. During the investigation, it was learned that a friend of Officer Lovelace named Zachary spoke with him on his personal cell phone that night of January 16th, just after the time of the traffic stop, thus confirming that Officer Loveless was in possession of his cell phone. Zachary would not provide any additional information. Investigators also confirmed that Officer Loveless contacted another Scottsdale PD employee named Arnie, who stated she spoke with Officer Loveless in the time frame that was just after the attempted traffic stop by Officer Adams. Officer Loveless was later interviewed by Internal Affairs and admitted to being the driver on the night that Officer Adams attempted to stop him for the initial red light violation. He admitted to drinking 6 to 8 beers from the time frame of 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., which is just prior to the attempted traffic stop. Officer Loveless admitted that he was panicked and used bad judgment. When asked if he was intoxicated, he stated sure, and then stated 100%. Charges of unlawful flight and reckless driving were submitted to the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and after review, prosecution was declined. Officer Loveless was terminated from his agency. Based upon these facts, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Bradshaw. Questions, comments? There are none. I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Jamie Kelly, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Loveless's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Director, Mr. Johnson. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Last case of the day, 2021-114. Mr. Bradshaw, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board. This case involves Deputy Samuel Wood. During the night of February 5th, 2021, while on duty at his residence, Apache County Sheriff's Deputy Samuel A. Wood was contacted by dispatch regarding an ongoing telephone call from a person threatening suicide who had only agreed to speak to Deputy Wood. Deputy Wood took the call, and although the caller would not identify himself, it was discovered that the subject was a neighbor of Deputy Wood. The subject informed Deputy Wood that he had a gun, but that he would only point the gun at his own head, and Deputy Wood replied, "You point the gun at my head, I'm going to blow your brains out." The telephone call was terminated, and Deputy Wood checked on duty, and then, being informed his backup was several minutes away, he advised dispatch that he was going to meet with the subject. After several minutes, Deputy Wood informed dispatch that he had checked the area without locating the subject. Deputy Wood also instructed dispatch to cancel backup and medical response units. Following his contact with dispatch, Deputy Wood failed to answer calls from responding deputies. Arizona Department of Public Safety Trooper Weller had arrived in the area of Deputy Wood's residence, parked and walked into Deputy Wood's property to make a welfare check. Trooper Weller located Deputy Wood and the subject at Deputy Wood's residence, where Deputy Wood was observed smoking a cigar while talking to a subject who was sitting on his front porch. Deputy Wood informed Trooper Weller that he was code 4 and walked Trooper Weller back to the main gate of his property while informing Trooper Weller that he had been drinking. When Deputy Wood and Trooper Weller arrived at the property gate, they were met by Apache County Deputy Billy. After Trooper Weller departed, Deputy Wood informed Deputy Billy that he had located the subject and that he had put his weapon into his chest of the subject during their initial contact. Deputy Wood also informed Deputy Billy that he, Deputy Wood, had been drinking and that the subject was not suicidal. Deputy Billy departed the area and met with on-duty Apache County Sergeant Noda and Trooper Weller and informed them about her contact with Deputy Wood. During their discussion, Trooper Weller and Deputy Billy informed Sergeant Noda that Deputy Willie displayed signs of being intoxicated. Sergeant Noda and Deputy Billy responded to Deputy Wood's residence, and Deputy Wood informed Sergeant Noda that he had been drinking and that he had pointed his weapon at the subject, first at his chest and then at his head. Sergeant Noda and Deputy Wood left Deputy Wood's residence and responded to the residence of the subject, where they were met by medical personnel who transported that subject for medical evaluation. Deputy Wood has issued a notice of investigation and interviewed. were choice about his alcohol consumption preceding his contact with the subject, Deputy Wood admitted to having consumed 3 to 4 beers from about 12 o'clock to 1700 hours. The call for service was about 2130 hours. Deputy Wood further stated that after talking with the subject on the front porch of Deputy Wood's residence, he went inside and consumed 2 shots of rum to calm his nerves. When asked about his use of force, Deputy Wood stated he found the subject outside of his property gate and that the subject was walking with a crutch under his right arm that would not show his left hand. Deputy Wood said he gave several verbal commands for the subject to show his left hand, and after failing to do so, he went up to the subject and placed the barrel of the weapon in the subject's chest. A wallet was found in the subject's left hand, and the subject was not armed. Deputy Wood was not able to articulate any act of aggression by the subject other than the subject reported himself suicidal and in possession of a gun. When questioned as to why he advised dispatch that he did not make contact with the subject and canceled backup and medical response, Deputy Wood reported that the subject denied making the call to dispatch, and though he believed the person was the subject, he had insufficient evidence to support his belief. As disciplined for several sustained policy violations, including use of force, Deputy Wood was suspended for 30 days without pay and placed on administrative status pending the outcome of a post-board review of this matter. Based upon these facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings against Deputy Wood. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bradshaw. Comments, questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Wood's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second? Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Matt McGraw.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Bradshaw. Back to you, Director. Future agenda items and board members.
We have nothing as of right now, but I'm always happy to look into anything the board would like us to review.
Any final comments from board members? It's been a long meeting, I'll just say that. But thank you all for your patience and your bladders. With that, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Thank you, Chief. See you all next month. Be safe.